Blog Talk Radio.
That's right. Good evening, and welcome to Eerie House. It sounded like Ozzy. Eerie House Radio. It's all about the coffin. Coffin.
Cue the cough. Cue the cough.
Yeah. This is Dale Hack K from Spook Show here along with
Dave Cough Drop Binkley from Weirdest Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One.
I always thought of you more as a lemon drop. But anyway, yeah, no, not that kind of coffin. We're talking about those cadaver crates.
Cadaver crates. Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, cadaver crate. Corpse carton.
Ooh, somebody was preparing.
Yes. Read the descriptions. Yeah, those are fun sometimes to write up. Yeah, it's all about coffins tonight. Who's Bill Ward? I don't know. But Fosbane is here, along with Bill Ward. And me, and Dave.
Yeah.
And some old-time
maybe,
radio.
Maybe Fox can see things we can't. I got dirty glasses, so maybe Fox can see something I can't.
I got a dirty mind. But anyway.
Yeah, okay. Like we didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd have locked that up. I'd have locked that up in a coffin, Dale.
Yeah. And when you think of coffins, you think of, well, dead people for one. But I mean vampires, ghouls, ghosts, and such.
We used to have a place here in Akron, and it didn't last too long, but they had like a drive-by coffin showroom that you could drive by and pick out your coffin. But I guess you can get a coffin anywhere. You can even get a coffin through Costco, I guess.
Yep. The Fosbane caught that soundbite at the beginning. He goes, "Oh, Bill Ward." And that's who Bill Ward was. I knew the name was familiar. He was the drummer for Black Sabbath. That was the beginning of Sweet Leaf, a song about something that Ohio will be voting on soon.
Yeah. That is this year. Yes. That is this year. They kept saying it wouldn't make it. There's another one that won't make it, but there are two that are going to make it, and they're getting a lot of attention.
Yes, they are. We're going to steer clear from at least one of those topics for sure, I know.
We'll take care of both of them. Yeah.
Yeah, we ought to. We're not about the politics, man. We're about the fun. We don't care who you vote for.
The marijuana stuff isn't legal yet, so we don't want to really talk about that until it's legal.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They can come and take my microphone away, you know. That wouldn't be very nice.
Yeah, them FBI guys will be looking at us. And Homeland Security.
Well, they always think we're doing crimes anyway, you know, those guys when we're around.
They sure do. Snowman James, thanks for joining us tonight in the chat. We got three tales about coffins. You know, we think of vampires, but there's a good scene with a coffin with the Wolfman in, I think it's Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman, where Larry's kind of laid out and they bring him back. The two gravediggers expose him to moonlight and remove the wolf's bane that they buried him with.
Yep.
And away he goes.
And exposing them would be a lot different on streaming television than it was back then, yeah.
Yep. That was the version of Lugosi played the monster. Frankenstein.
Yeah.
The Wolfman. Yep.
Yeah. Which was so weird because he turned it down to begin with.
Yeah. He turned it down and then he was supposed to speak in it and then they edited it out. He mysteriously lost his powers of speech after Son of Frankenstein. I think in Ghost, No, did he have any Ghost of Frankenstein too? I don't know. I'm going to be reviewing those because it is the season for Universal Monster Movie watching, at least.
Yeah, and what's funny about that is the picture we think of Frankenstein, we think of him with his arms out, you know, as he's walking and stuff. Karloff never did that.
Glenn Strange did it a little bit. And so did Lugosi, for sure.
Lugosi
but
did
that was
do
also,
it, yeah.
They edited out the fact that he was blind. The monster was blinded for a time.
Sad, being blind at birth like that.
Yeah, and then they made him mute again, too. So it's like, this guy can't win. No wonder he had an attitude. Jeez.
Yeah, I'd have an attitude.
Can you leave a monster alone? Anyway. Three good programs tonight. We got Dark Fantasy, Philip Marlowe.
And Suspense.
Suspense.
This is one of the early Suspense. About 4 years into the show with the Suspense. We got the Man in Black and all that fun stuff. And the good old wine, Roma wine. Yeah.
Made
in California
because
nobody else wanted it. Yeah, something like that.
Yes. How could it be Roma if it was made in California?
Not Romine. Oh, yeah, Roma. Yeah, but made from tomatoes, the best tomatoes.
Yeah, there you go.
The Roma tomatoes, yes.
The fields of Sicily. Italy? No, California. Okay. What's up?
I didn't even know California was known for their tomatoes. But I guess we're wrong on that one.
Oh, you don't remember the beach movies with Annette Funicello? I saw a lot of nice tomatoes, I'll tell you.
Different kind of tomato deal. Different kind of tomato.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. We have a real peach of a radio program to start with.
So what shall I mean?
Let's start with Phil.
I'll start with Phil. Get a detective in here.
We'll get our detective story done first. The Iron Coffin, it's called.
Yeah, the Iron Coffin. Good old Philip Marlowe. And this guy, after he lost his gig as Philip Marlowe, he did an audition because Johnny Dollar had stopped. He did an audition program, which is available out on the internet, but he didn't get the job. It went to Bob Bailey, who had just left. Let George do it. So.
From the famous song, Won't You Come Home, Bob Bailey? Won't you come?
No, from home? Something like that. Let George do it. Yeah, that's where it came from. And he had the same great tones, but it was just different on Johnny Dollar. The writing was just a little bit sharper and better stories, that's all.
Yeah. And this episode comes to us from way back.
It was episode number 92 and comes to us through from July 12th of 1950.
Get this and get it straight. Crime is a sucker's road. Those who travel it wind up in the gutter of the prison of the grave. There's no other end, but they never learn.
Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum, the refreshing, delicious treat that gives you chewing enjoyment, presents for your listening enjoyment Raymond Chandler's most famous character in The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. To make every day more enjoyable, treat yourself often to refreshing, delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. Here's a taste treat you can enjoy indoors, outdoors, at work, or at play. The cool, long-lasting mint flavor refreshes you. The smooth, steady chewing helps keep you fresh and alert. Adds enjoyment to whatever you're doing. Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. Healthful, refreshing, delicious. Now, with Gerald Moore starred as Philip Marlowe, the makers of Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum are glad to bring you tonight's exciting story, The Iron Coffin.
Thank you.
Dear sir, I wouldn't touch your proposition with someone else's 10-foot pole, period. Furthermore, hello?
Would you connect me with Mr. Marlowe, please? Philip Marlowe, the private investigator.
This is Philip Marlowe.
Oh, I'm so glad I caught you. Mr. Marlowe, you've been very highly recommended to me by a very dear friend, and I want to employ your services for a case.
All right, who are you?
I'm Catherine Newbold.
Uh-huh.
It's about my daughter, Irene, or more exactly, about her fiancé. I want you to find him for me. He's 26, dark complexioned, about 5'10" and...
Well, just a minute, Mrs. Newbold. It's a little early for descriptions. What's the nature of his disappearance?
Mr. Marlowe.
Yeah?
I'm afraid I just can't explain over the phone. I'm at the boy's place now. Would you come over here? It's 4220 and a half Bronx.
4220 and a half, huh?
You see, Bennett is lost, and Irene's gone to help him, and she may get lost, too.
Well, how do you mean that, Mrs. Newbold? Lost where?
Back somewhere in the 16th century.
After she hung up, I spent a few minutes trying to decide if I should take along my .38 or a butterfly net. But in spite of what I thought she'd said about the 16th century, I was convinced that Mrs. Newbold was a genuinely worried woman. I'd sold myself on that by the time I hit Bronson Avenue. When I finally found number 4220 and a half, I began to unsell myself fast. Said 4220 and a half was a sagging second floor of a weed-ridden tile and stucco heap on the alley, in back of a dead delicatessen. The windows were heavily shuttered behind rusty iron grills, and the heavy door was set at the top of a narrow flight of unreliable wooden stairs.
Mr. Marlowe, I'm Mrs. Newbold.
Hello. The looks of this place on the outside, holy smoke.
It's rather bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah, to say the very least.
These are Bennett Virago's rooms. He's a student.
Of what, alchemy? His place is a museum. Everything in here must date back to the...
Yes, to the 16th century.
That's what you said, yeah.
That's what I meant. Mr. Marlowe, 2 years ago when my daughter met Bennett, he was a nice, normal boy with a great enthusiasm for history.
Uh-huh.
He's brilliant. I liked him, and Irene, of course, fell madly in love with him. But then...
Then what, Mrs. Newbold?
Then it began to change. He was working awfully hard toward his doctor's degree when suddenly he seemed to hit a snag.
How do you mean?
Well, he became obsessed with a particular period in history, Spanish history.
Well, that's not so unusual. That's how guys become specialists.
Oh, but it's more than that. His interest was much more than scholarly. It became a morbid fascination.
Oh?
Look at these relics, Mr. Marlowe.
Yeah?
At first, Bennett only studied them. But in the last year, he began to live with these things exclusively. More and more until he left a month ago. And now, well, I just don't know.
You know, my guess is the boy needs a psychiatrist, not a private detective. Where's he now?
Well, I'm not sure, but this morning a note came from Irene. It was mailed in Santa Barbara 2 days ago, the day she left. She might be with him.
Yeah, but you said you had an idea where they might be.
I do. See this book?
Yeah. It's a castle. Constructed in the year 1540 by Peter the Cruel of Lerma near the present city of Valdemoro. Seized in 1562 after a violent struggle by the Count of Castile. Dominique Virago.
Yes. And look here. I found this old newspaper clipping in that book there.
Uh-huh.
It's about that very castle. It says it was... torn down in 1887 by an eccentric millionaire bachelor and rebuilt stone for stone on an isolated part of the California coast known as Point Estero.
Uh-huh.
The man who spent his entire fortune on this single project was Philip Virago.
For Pete's sake.
And that's where they are. They must be.
Well, considering what we started with, that makes sense.
I looked it up, Mr. Marlowe. Point Estero is just above Morro Bay, about 200 miles north of here. Will you go up there and find out what's wrong? I'm awfully worried.
I I told her the transplanted castles from Spain were not exactly my cup of tequila. But between the check she handed me and the look in her eyes, I figured a drive along the beach might do me good. Well, I made Santa Barbara by 4, and by 6:30 I was watching the surly Pacific surf hurl itself at the huge granite lump called Morrow Rock. The farther north I got, the manner of the ocean became. A hulking bank of solid black clouds offshore made a hollow mockery out of daylight savings time. And 20 miles beyond Morrow Bay, I had to turn out my lights. By rough calculation, the castle was another 10. But when 11.7 had turned up on the speedometer without so much as a single battlement in view, I decided to turn my lights back on again and stop for some local advice. My first chance was a combination motor court, restaurant, and mobile gas station, labeled Summit Light California, L. Chester Poindexter Prop.
Howdy, friend. Bad night to be out on the road, huh? What'll you have?
Yeah, a cup of coffee.
Okay. Driving on up north?
No. No, as a matter of fact, I'm looking for that old Spanish castle. It's along this coast somewhere.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Got any idea how I can get there?
You got business here?
Yeah, I might have. Why?
Just wondered.
Mm.
Not a good place, mister. Folks in these parts like to forget it here.
Oh? What's wrong with it?
Nothing, maybe. Then again, well, it was built 60 years ago by a madman, mister. Brought it over here from Spain, complete, even to the furniture.
Mm, so I hear.
They say it belonged to his ancestors, and he brought them, too, every one of their bodies. Their coffins are down there under that castle right now, 13 of them.
How do you know?
I talked to an old-timer once who helped put that place together. 7 men died on that job, and you know what he told me? One of them coffins is iron, and it's 8 feet long.
He made a great fullback here. Fill it up again, will you?
It ain't funny. They say his name was Peter the Cruel.
Now, look, Chester, you're not lathering yourself up into a ghost story for tourists, are you?
You asked me, and I'm telling you.
All I asked you was how to get there.
You see that light out there?
Hmm?
Across the bay and past the breakwater? Wait till she comes around again. There, see it?
Yeah.
That's up on the summit of Point Estero. Well, the castle's just a mile past that. There's not much of a road in, but you can make it.
Okay, thanks.
It's right down next to the water, in a nasty, jagged little cove. Altogether, it's 3 miles from here.
Much obliged.
There's something else you might keep in mind.
Huh?
Like I said, I don't hold with ghosts. But I know for a fact them coffins are sealed in a crypt under that castle. But they don't stay put. They get thrown around. Folks have heard them thumping. Good night, friend.
The highway dropped down close to the quiet bay, which was sheltered by the breakwater. At 100 yards out, a white sailboat, its mast pointing straight up at the stars. It made a strange contrast to the pounding surf a mile beyond, where I found the turnoff to the castle. It beat a year's depreciation out of my car in 10 minutes. But finally, at the top of a small rise, I saw it, the Spanish castle. It was a grim, gray mess of crooked walls and twisted towers that crouched on the shore like something that had crawled up from the bottom of the sea. When I pulled to a stop in front of the main gate, I saw there were lights in one of the lower rooms. I started in, and then I saw something else. A girl running down the path toward me.
Oh, you've got to help me. Somebody's going to be killed.
Killed? In there, in the castle?
Yes. Oh, hurry, please.
All right, come on.
Thank heaven I saw your headlights.
I'm glad I found you, Miss Newbold.
How did you know?
I guess right.
What do you mean?
Well, your mother was pretty sure I'd find you here. I'm a private detective, Philip Marlowe.
Oh.
What's this about somebody being killed?
It's Bennett. He's almost out of his mind, Mr. Marlowe. He's gone down to the crypt under the castle. I tried to stop him, but I couldn't. He's killed down there, just like the others.
Like what others, Irene?
All the other viragos, all his ancestors. Peter the Cruel will kill him.
Oh, now, just a minute. Come on.
I must sound crazy, too. Maybe I am. This horrible place.
Oh, baby, take it easy. This is the age of rocket planes and bebop, remember?
Not in here. Here is the 16th century.
Oh, settle down. Tell me what's really going on.
I am. Day before yesterday, I was just as skeptical as you are. That's why I came here. But now... Mr. Marlowe, Bennett Virago is fighting a battle that's been going on for 400 years. A battle with a monster called Peter the Cruel.
The one in the oversized iron coffin downstairs?
Yes.
Hmm. Come on, baby, show me. What I could see in the light of the four candles in the holder I picked up, I didn't like. She led me first down a long flight of stairs, then through a maze of ponderous arched pillars that made the catacombs seem cozy by comparison. Finally, we stopped in front of a heavy door with an iron ring in it. I hauled it open and almost fell in. We were at the top of a deep circular room, carved from solid bedrock. Stairs that must have been designed by a reckless mountain goat followed the curving wall down to the bottom. There, in the light of a torch stuck in a bracket, a man was working frantically over a big trap door set in the center of the floor. It was Bennett Varado. I told Irene to go back upstairs and wait, and then I started down. Philip Marlowe. I'm a friend of Irene. She told me I'd find you down here.
Get out of here. I refuse to be responsible.
I'll be responsible for me, Phil. I'm used to it. Hey, you sure you can't use some help? You look pretty tired.
I'm exhausted. But I'm not going to stop until I've settled this business once and for all. And I won't tolerate any interference. Do you understand?
No. Interference in what?
I'm going to spend the night in the crypt under this door. I've got to know the truth. Listen. If you're really Irene's friend, please take her away into town, at Poindexter's place. She's not safe here. Nobody is. Every document I found verifies it.
Verifies what?
Mr. Marlowe, I'll show you. On one condition. Give me your word that once I'm in there and this door is closed, you'll leave here and take Irene with you. Well?
Okay, Virago, it's a deal. Show me.
All right. Take that crowbar and help me get this open.
Okay.
Tonight I broke the seals that were put on this door 30 years ago. At that time, the coffins were in three straight rows.
And now?
I know what I'm going to find. It's happened before.
Hey, Buster, this thing is heavy. You'll never open it from the inside by yourself.
Servant Ramiro has his orders. You'll open them. Quick, prop it with your bar.
I got it. Well, Virago.
Stay back. Don't move until I get the torch down there. Now. Look.
I saw walls slimy with pale moss, a rotten stone floor scarred with deep fissures, and the coffins that had been in three neat rows were scattered in crazy confusion. But that wasn't enough. In the middle of it all was the iron one, 8 feet long, standing right straight up on end.
Now maybe you'll believe me.
Virago, listen, wait a minute. Maybe you better think this over.
You gave me your word.
Yeah, but no kid threw those coffins around like that.
Now you're beginning to understand. Get out, Marlowe. Get out fast. Heaven only knows what might happen here tonight.
To make every day more enjoyable, treat yourself often to refreshing, delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. The lively, full-bodied, real mint flavor cools your mouth, moistens your throat, freshens your taste. And the chewing itself gives you a little lift, helps you keep going at your best. So for real chewing enjoyment that's refreshing and long-lasting, always keep Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum handy. Healthful, delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Gum will make every day more enjoyable.
That's right. Chew that cud.
Looked up Gerald Moore. We never really talked about Gerald Moore once, and we played a couple of these Philip Marlowe's. He was in more than 500 radio appearances in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, and appeared in over 100 TV episodes in the 50s. So this is a guy that was all over the place. Some of his radio roles, he took over for Matt Crowley for a short interval in Jungle Jim. He, of course, was Philip Marlowe in 119 of these episodes. He also played The Adventures of Bill Lance and Lone Wolf. He also was one of the original, one of the Archie Goodwins in The New Adventures of Nero Wolf. That one, it was a one-season wonder, and it was Sidney Greenstreet's health that kind of caused that to not go any further. But he was the reason they went through about four different people playing Archie Goodwin in that 1 year, just because they couldn't get along or with Sydney or Sydney wouldn't get along with them, one case or another. Because actually, Sydney, the role of Archie is actually bigger than that of Nero Wolfe. You know, Nero Wolfe was a bigger guy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But he also was a frequent appearances on The Whistler and the multiple episodes of one of your favorites, Dale, Damon Runyon Theater.
Ah.
Also, Lux Radio Theater, Escape, Shadow of Fu Manchu, and Armis Brooks. And interesting thing here, in the early 1950s, he made a series of recordings for the Voice of America, but unlike most of the VOA things, they weren't really for just the servicemen. These were intended to be broadcast by radio stations in the U.S. with the goal of debunking propaganda broadcasts from behind the Iron Curtain.
Darn those Ruskies.
To go with those, there was Iron Coffin we got going here tonight.
Yes. And a good tale with Philip Marlowe leading the way. Yeah, the adventure built up pretty quick in this one. They didn't waste any time getting to it.
Action-packed, as they say, right?
Action-packed radio, Detective Fun. Let's wrap up the Iron Coffin with Gerald Moore.
Now with our star, Gerald Moore, the second act of Philip Marlowe and tonight's exciting story, The Iron Coffin.
I kept telling myself that Virago wasn't in any danger. That this was 1950 and spirits from the 16th century didn't stand a ghost of a chance against a determined man. But I couldn't quite believe it. And things didn't get any cozier as I watched the man with the obsession descend into the crypt. A candle in his hand, casting a crazy chorus of shadow dancers against the dripping wet walls. After the trapdoor crashed shut, I kept holding on tight to the 20th century and things that made it tick. And that helped until I was back up to the basement level.
A moment of your time, please, senor.
A tangle of gray, black, shaggy hair fell all around a grisly old face that could have scared a Halloween mask. And the rest of them fit from a build that included almost no shoulders, ape-long, scrawny arms, and an outfit that was medieval.
I did not mean to alarm you, senor.
Yeah, you couldn't miss. It's so dark in here. You're Ramiro?
Si, Ramiro. I, senor, wait upon the master of this house, even as my father did, and his father before him. Always, senor, Ramiro has been in service in this castle, always since Peter the Cruel.
You mean you came over here from Spain? You were imported with this castle?
Si, indeed. It had to be that way, senor. None else but Ramiro knows the castle. Every stone, every fixture, every sound in the night. My senor, there where you stand, Ramiro stood on that fateful day in the year 1562 when Dominique Virago, the Count of Castile, sentenced Peter the Cruel to his death. Oh, it was an awesome occasion, senor.
I'll bet.
The story of that day lives in my mind as though I had been present. I hear and see it all. Hear and see the fantastic spectacle in this very room. The place lighted by flaming torches. The prisoner was Peter the Cruel. His legs bound in heavy chains and weighted with an iron ball. The crowd rushed forward to hear what he had to say.
Dominique Virago, Count of Castile, do this day proclaim the tyrannical rule of the prisoner before me at an end. And I do further proclaim that the prisoner, Peter the Cruel, be hanged, wearing the shackles and weights of a common thief. And when his body is dead, I order it cut down and sealed in an iron coffin, the chains not removed. Only by right of the royal blood of our father do I allow his remains to be placed in the family crypt below this rope. Now, Peter the Cruel,
You have heard this sentence. How do you speak?
I speak, dear righteous ruler, very plainly. This, the day of my execution, is a black day. A black day for you, Dominique Virago, for Castile, for Spain. For in spirit I will not die, not go to the crypt below. In spirit I will not rest until I have had my revenge through all the years that follow this day. This black day! You and your ancestors, beware, Virago!
And that, senor, they did. Hanged him and buried him below us. That is why I stopped you here, to warn you.
Yes, well, tell me, Ramiro, your ancestors, whose side were they on? The Count or Peter the Cruel? Well?
The Ramiro served only one man, senor. The master of the house. Even as I today serve only one man. The master of the house. Good night, senor.
He glared at me for a long moment with sickly yellow eyes. Then he stepped back and was gone. Well, a few minutes later, I found Irene Newbold and told her what had happened at the crypt and of Virago's wish that she spend the night at Poindexter's place. When I saw her make one valiant try to keep from going to pieces, I picked up her coat and bag, held her firmly by the arm, and walked her fast outside into my car. It kept her thinking for a while. When we arrived at Poindexter's, I promised to awaken her at dawn for the return trip to the castle. She thanked me and went to her room, and a few minutes later, I went to mine. After 3 hours of cigarette-filled sleeplessness had gone by, I slipped outside and watched the summit light that winked at me every third second. I didn't wink back. And the sight of El Chester Poindexter standing at the cliff's edge ahead, looking toward the bay below and the long, wide wash of the full moon, didn't help any.
How do, Mr. Marlowe? Trouble sleeping?
Yeah, your local ghost made good. He keeps propping my eyelids open.
And you don't feel up to much smart joking either, huh, Mr. Marlowe?
Poindexter, I'm worried about Virago.
And you should be. That Peter the Cruel was certainly a powerful party.
Oh, nuts, the Peter the Cruel. There's another answer. There's got to be.
But you said Virago.
Yeah, and I meant Virago. Virago in his own mind. He won't even look for another answer. He'll keep fighting ghosts until the boys in the white jackets with court orders call for him. And then there's Irene.
Mr. Marlowe, you were saying...
Hey, Poindexter. Look out there. See out there that boat anchored in the bay?
Yeah.
That's the same one I saw from the road before, isn't it? The road I took to the castle?
Sure. Only sailboat around here. Spring tide certainly has her dipping for moss tonight, huh?
Certainly has. Her, me, and a lot of other things, including the fact that our boy who's chasing ghosts is going to be killed by something very real if we don't get a move on. Come on, come on. We're all going to the castle in a big hurry.
Marlowe, are you sure you're right? I can't believe the answer's that simple.
Doesn't matter, Irene. Simple or not, it can still kill. Come on, Poindexter. We're going to run for it. Every second counts now. You catch up to us, Irene. We're going ahead. Poindexter followed me as I ran into the castle and down the stone stairs to the basement and along the passageway that led to the spot above the crypt where I first met Marimo. But we both climbed to a stop at the sight of something I couldn't expect to find this side of the Dark Ages. It was Ramiro again, only this time minus his apron and long winter underwear and plus a head-to-toe black coat of mail with a shiny steel helmet spike on top tucked underneath his arm. And in one hand a lantern that swung to and fro with his cackling. In the other a long sword, vintage Lady of the Lake.
They're fighting down there in the crypt. The Virago, the last of the Viragos, and Peter the Cruel. Peter, who is to have his revenge.
Get out of the way, Romero. Come on, Poindexter. We got to get the door open.
No! No, stop!
Get lost! How quiet!
Are we in time? Is Bennett all right?
I don't know yet. Watch that jerk in the fancy dress. If he gets up, yell. Come on, Poindexter. We got to get the door open.
Yeah, come on.
It's coming. Look, the crypt is filled with water, just like you said.
Help me.
Oh, Bennett, thank heaven you're all right.
Virago, here. Take my hand. Reach for it.
There we are. Couldn't have lasted another minute. The water came through the cracks in the floor. And the coffins, they floated.
That's right. They're bumping against the sides of the crypt as the thumping sound you people have heard.
Yes. And when the water subsides again, the coffins will be scattered all over. Yeah. Oh, Bennett, darling, you see, it's no angry spirit.
Yes, but why the water, Mr. Marlowe, and why... Why does Peter the Cruel's coffin always stand on end upright? Where does the water come from?
The sea. There's an unusually high tide tonight. Spring tide, they call it. Right, Poindexter?
Right. Happens when the sun and the moon are in either direct conjunction or opposition.
You see, the castle's so close to the ocean and the crypt so deep that the water seeps in as the tide rises.
Oh, I see.
And as for Peter the Cruel, he settles upright because the old boy was buried in his coffin with his bondage chains still wrapped around his feet, according to legend. Mm-hmm. Ask Ramiro there. I'll be glad to tell you all about it.
Senor, it is more than legend. It is truth. Truth, sir, that no
one can tell. Oh, shut up, Ramiro. Had enough of you and your stories.
Mr. Marlowe, how did you know? I mean...
You mean, what got you here in time? How did you think of the spring tide, Mr. Marlowe?
Well, it was a sailboat anchored in the bay, Irene. You know, when I first saw it, its mast pointed straight up at the stars. When I saw it again, hours later, it was dipped forward sharply because the anchor chain had been pulled tight by the rising tide. Well, that gave me the hunch I needed.
The hunch we needed, Mr. Marlowe. Thanks a lot. I'm glad to be out of the 16th century, and you know something?
What?
I think I'll stay out.
Well, it was another hour before we left the strange relic of another day. An hour in which everybody found himself thinking of Peter the Cruel, his vengeful spirit. Oh, well. The tide took care of him.
Oh, Marlo, did you hear that?
No. Yeah, well, as I was saying, that's the beauty of reality. Yeah, you can figure everything out.
Oh, Marlo, there it is again.
Oh, that's nothing. It's probably just a wind.
Look, that figure up on the ramparts.
Figure? Ramparts? Well, that's Ramiro. Or is it?
Remember, friends, to make every day more enjoyable, treat yourself often to refreshing, delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. There's lots of cooling, real mint flavor in every stick. And chewing Wrigley's Spearmint helps keep you feeling fresh and alert. You feel better, work better, get more fun out of doing things. So indoors, outdoors, wherever you go, keep some healthful, refreshing Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum handy. To make every day more enjoyable, treat yourself often to delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. Adventures of Philip Marlowe, presented by Wrigley's Spearmint Gum, bring you Raymond Chandler's most famous character and star, Gerald Moore. Philip Marlowe is produced and directed by Norman MacDonald and written for radio by Robert Mitchell and Gene Levitt. Featured in the cast were Irene Tedrow, Lillian Byath, David Ellis, Jay Novello, Parley Bear, Barney Phillips, and Edgar Berrier. The special music is composed and conducted by Richard Arant. The makers of Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum hope you've enjoyed tonight's adventure of Philip Marlowe and that you're enjoying Wrigley's Spearmint Gum every day. We invite you to be with us next week when Philip Marlowe says...
This time a dying man's last wish led me from a gunman with orders to stop me past the battered corpse in a crumbling mansion to a ruthless redhead playing for keeps. And when it was over, the one in the middle got away with everything except the dying man's last wish.
This is Bob Stevenson speaking, and this is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
La, 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 la.
Little swanky swing time music there to wrap up. Philip Marlowe.
Yep, all kinds of things you can learn from that kind of show, I would think.
Well, you would think. You would think someone would be ready with the soundbite. But no. Erie House Radio proudly presents A Garless Moral of the Story.
It's apologies to Gar. It's always a question of what is stronger, an iron casket, iron bars, or an ironclad prenup agreement. Tarzan knows about prenups with he had one with Jane. Lose his loincloth on that one. Yeah.
Yep. And he had to keep Boy. And Cheetah.
And
Cheetah.
A lot of banana child support on that one, I'm telling you.
A lot of banana. Then that kid goes to school. What's your name, Boy? Boy.
That's what I'm saying. What's your name, Boy? Boy.
Thank you. We're glad you figured that part out, but
yeah. Anyway. Didn't exactly have internet in the jungle back then. Yeah, you knew, might now, but you wouldn't back then. Yeah.
No, not a lot. If so, I'm sure it was a very primitive form of internet. It's called yelling through the trees.
Like my soup can in the backyard with my buddy two houses over?
No, here's your internet. There you go. There's your internet.
Yeah, but when you do that, you know, elephants move and crocodiles move and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, it wasn't very individualized. Everybody just started moving.
Yeah, they all figured out, gosh, Tarzan's yelling about something. Let's get him out of trouble once again.
Yep. Well, you don't have the movie stop coming, you know? Next thing you know, he's playing Jungle Jim instead, you know? What the heck?
Jungle Jim. I wonder what happened to Jungle Larry. Anyway, I got to meet Safari Jane.
Maybe we should ask Jungle Bob what happened to Jungle Larry.
True. Yeah. Jungle Larry was a...
Cedar Point.
Animal trainer,
Cedar Point.
I guess.
Cedar Point, wasn't he? Cedar Point.
Cedar Point. And Safari Jane carried on after him. I remember after he passed, Denise and I went to go see her show, and we got to talk to her backstage a little bit because we wanted her advice on iguanas. We had just gotten an iguana. And she said, oh, they're great. She would take them for walks and stuff like that. Pretty tame. I mean, she didn't have them on leashes or anything. Yeah, they ended up going to Florida. Is that right, Mike Mace? Mike Mace would know.
Mike Mace knows these things. I would never go against Mike Mace or Bob Houlihan Wells in a trivia contest. Never, ever,
especially,
ever. But I go up against those two guys.
Especially in this Cleveland area. Yep.
Oh,
they know their stuff about broadcasting.
We were sitting there with the Midnight Movie guys one night, the Hooley's family and Mike and I and the Midnight Movie people. I think Karen was there. And that trivia just kept flying, and I don't know who got there first, Mike or Hooley, but it was about a 50-50 chance that one or the other would get it before anyone else got near it, that's for sure.
Italy. I bet you they made Roma wine there, too. They moved to Naples, he said, I guess.
No, Naples, Florida.
Oh, that's different.
Yeah, yeah. Hey. There's more than one Naples. And one of them's in Florida.
There's always two Naples. There's always two Naples, aren't there? But I digress.
No.
Move on.
Good thing CW isn't here.
Oh, boy, she's just slapping me senseless, and I'd probably enjoy it. Our next feature is from Suspense, a little ditty entitled Postmortem. Postmortem.
Yeah, that's easy for you to say.
Yeah, well, rented lips.
I'm trying to figure out the thing.
Any kind of factoids on this one?
Not off the top of my head. I forget who was in it. I did listen earlier again, but I forget that we do have some kind of a star in this one that is not your usual necessarily radio fare that I remember.
Suspense is always good.
I cannot figure out this. Okay, that's what it is. Okay, I figured out there's all kinds of numbers on this thing, so I now have the presumptive number and date. Episode number 187, coming to us from April 4th of 1940 and 6.
Now, Roma Wines, R-O-M-A, made in California for enjoyment throughout the world. Roma Wines presents Suspense. Tonight, Roma Wines bring you the MGM star, Miss Agnes Moorehead, in Postmortem. A suspense play produced, edited, and directed for Roma Wines by William Spear. Suspense, radio's outstanding theater of thrills, is presented for your enjoyment by Roma Wines. That's R-O-M-A, Roma Wines. Those excellent California wines that can add so much pleasantness to the way you live, to your happiness in entertaining guests, to your enjoyment of everyday meals. Yes, right now a glassful would be very pleasant, as Roma Wines bring you Agnes Moorehead in a remarkable tale of suspense.
Up with the buttercups, come on, get up, here comes the sun. Good morning, darling.
Even you, Goose.
Ah, your coffee, madame.
Oh, my stars and crown, I wish you wouldn't insist on my having coffee in bed. Stephen, it makes me feel like a loose character, just like the old days when I was in the theater.
Coffee in bed, then a long soak in the tub under the sun lamp. That's old Doc Archer's prescription for those aches and pains of yours.
I haven't any aches and pains for weeks now.
There, that proves it. You can't afford to stop the treatment now. Besides, you look beautiful with a suntan.
Well, if that's the case, have some coffee with me.
Oh, I'm sorry, it's 9:00.
Well, that train doesn't leave till 9:22.
Ah, but the early bird gets the seat, my precious.
Well,
I'll just start the water running and set up the lamp.
Oh, you needn't go to all that bother.
How do you like your water this morning? Warm, lukewarm, hot?
Warm.
I'm setting the lamp for 10 minutes.
Oh.
Mind you, don't take too much.
All right, dear. All right.
Now, if you get in the bath, just as you hear me close the front door, you'll get just the right amount of sunshine.
Oh, really, Stephen?
Now, where's my goodbye kiss?
Stephen, I... Goodbye.
Goodbye. Up with the buttercups. Come on, get up. Here comes the sun.
Up with my bed. Up with my bed.
Everything now. Sorry to disturb you, darling.
Well, you better hurry. You will miss that train.
Bye-bye, darling. Be good.
Come on, get out of here.
Okay, Butch. Oh, if I had the wings of an angel.
Oh, now what? All right, all right. I'm coming. Today. What was that you called me?
Are you Mrs. Josephine Meade?
Well, I was. My name is Archer now. I've remarried. What was it?
This is the place, fellas.
Hold everything. We're coming.
Well, who are those men? Who are you?
Oh, does she know yet?
Oh, hold that, will you, Mrs. Meade?
Well,
all right, fine. Now let's try another one inside. Maybe in the kitchen. Yes. What were you doing? Fixing breakfast for your husband?
Now put the camera away. Can't you think she doesn't know yet?
She don't know yet.
Haven't you been listening to the radio, Mrs. Meade?
Well, no, a tube's burned out. Why?
She really don't know yet.
Well, for heaven's sake, will you tell me what it is?
Well, aren't you going to ask us in?
Well, I shouldn't.
Why, that's very kind.
Oh, well,
yeah,
I...
Yeah, put the camera over there, Sam.
Well,
Now, your husband, ma'am.
Well, he just left the house. Has something happened to him?
No. We got news for you, Mrs. Meade.
I wish you'd stop calling me Mrs. Meade. My name is Archer now. I explained that to this man here.
Westcott's my name. Paul Westcott. I'm from the Evening Bulletin.
Oh, you're a newspaper man.
Yeah.
My stars and ground, I haven't been interviewed by the press since I opened in Bright Eyes in New Haven. Oh, 20 years ago.
You were an actress.
Well, I gave up my career after I married Miss Meade. I often thought I might go back to the theater, but things didn't work out that way.
Yeah, well, that's very interesting, Mrs. Archer, but about the news we were going to tell you.
Well, don't tell her. Make a guess.
Oh, please, let me...
Can't you guess?
No, and I wish you'd...
Well, I'll give you a hint. It's the day the Derby has run off.
Derby?
Can't you guess why we're here? Your horses come in first.
Oh, you must have the wrong party. I don't own any horse.
Oh, look.
No. Don't you understand? The news just came over the ticker from London. You're one of the three Americans to hold a ticket on Ravenel in the sweepstakes.
Oh, there must be some mistake.
Don't you understand? You've won $150,000.
$150,000? Oh, my stars and crowns.
What's the matter?
What?
Don't that make you happy?
Boy, what a caption. Housewife wins sweepstakes. Must be mistake, she said.
Oh, no. Oh, there really must be some mistake somewhere. It must be somebody else of the same name. You see, I haven't any ticket on I haven't any ticket at all.
Well, sure, you must have. Where'd they get your name and address from otherwise? They don't just make them up out of thin air. What are you trying to do, kid?
Oh, well, now, wait a minute. You say the winning ticket is in the name of Meade?
Yes, Mrs. Josephine Meade. You said that was your name.
Well, then it must have been my late husband who bought the ticket.
Huh?
You see, the Hawthins is my name, and I stayed on here after I lost Harry and after my marriage to Mr. Archer.
Oh, yeah, then that's right. Meade bought the sweepstakes ticket in your name. Anyway, you're the winner.
But I don't even have the ticket.
You don't have...
You mean
you
it's lost?
Well, I never even knew he bought one till now. He never said a word to me about it.
Gee, you better look around good and see if you can find it.
Yeah, you can't collect the money without it.
Have you any of your late husband's effects around the house, Mrs. Archer?
No, they've all been disposed of. But I went through everything very carefully. If there had been anything there, even sewn into the lining of one of his suits, I'd have found it.
I think, Mrs. Archer, if your late husband never told you about it, he must have been intending to surprise you in case it won anything. So he would have put it somewhere where you wouldn't be likely to find it, wouldn't he?
Well, he would in any case. I didn't approve of his gambling.
All right, Miss Archer, now think hard. Wasn't there a suit he didn't wear very much, one you might not have sent out since the ticket was bought? Put away in mothballs, maybe?
Well, there was his dark blue.
Dark blue.
He'd only worn that once or twice. I never looked there. You see, I sent all his other clothes to the Russian War Relief, but the dark blue was in such good condition, it's practically new, Mr. West.
Oh, that's where that ticket is. I'll bet any amount it's in that dark blue suit. Let's have a look right now.
Well, I'm afraid that's not possible.
Not possible.
Oh, really, Mrs. Barker?
Because that's the suit Mr. Meade was buried in.
For Suspense, Roma Wines are bringing you as star Agnes Moorhead in Postmortem, a radio play by Robert Tallman from the story by Cornell Woolrich. Roma Wines presentation tonight in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
Between the acts of Suspense, this is Truman Bradley for Roma Wines. Evenings at home can be dull as dishwashing or friendly as a fireside, depending upon the ingenuity of the lady of the house. Now, here's a simple suggestion many smart American homemakers follow to brighten stay-at-home nights. As a high spot in a quiet evening of restful reading, or listening to favorite radio shows, serve Roma California Sherry. For Roma Sherry helps an evening along, adds a welcome note of warmth to friendly companionship. Yes, there's something about glowing golden amber Roma Sherry with the rich, mellow, nut-like taste that everyone enjoys. Roma Sherry, the favorite of millions as first call for dinner, is a delightful entertainment wine, too. So delicious with cheese and crackers or any simple snack. And Roma brings you a glorious sherry that is unvaryingly fine, bottled at the famous Roma Winery in California to assure you sealed in goodness always. Give your family a pleasant surprise with fine Roma sherry tomorrow. Delicious, easy to serve, so inexpensive. Insist on Roma, R-O-M-A, Roma Wines. Remember, more Americans enjoy Roma than any other wine.
And now, Roma Wines bring back to our Hollywood soundstage Agnes Moorehead as Josie Archer with Joseph Kearns as Stephen in Postmortem, a tale well calculated to keep you in
suspense.
And that's the only place it can be. It's there in the casket with him.
What makes you so certain of that?
Well, the one and only time he wore that suit before his death was one Saturday afternoon when he went out for a stroll and stopped in at a pool room. What more likely place than that for him to have bought a sweepstakes ticket?
Well, if it's buried with him, we might as well kiss it goodbye.
But $150,000, Stephen.
You haven't any right to disturb a grave just on a hunch like that. Harry might have lost the ticket.
Oh, I tell you, I knew Harry Mead. He'd no more lose a thing like that than... Well, he just wouldn't, that's all.
If it's there, it'll just have to stay there.
But why, Stephen? All we have to do is get a court order.
I tell you, I won't stand for it. It's sacrilege.
Oh, wait.
If we've got to disturb the dead, we'll just have to let the money go.
But it wouldn't be like desecrating a grave. Harry would have wanted us to have that money. After all, you were his best friend.
As your husband, I forbid you to disturb that man's remains.
But Stephen, really,
now forget that there ever was such a sweepstakes ticket. Is that understood?
All right, Stephen. Whatever you say.
Yes. And if that snooping newspaper man comes back here, you're not to let him in this house.
Yes, Stephen.
Is that a promise now?
Yes, Stephen, it's a promise.
Well, I've got to go now. I'll miss my train. We'll talk about it some more tonight when I get home.
All right, dear.
Oh, don't forget to take your sun lamp treatment.
No, I won't. Bye now.
Goodbye, dear.
Hello? Oh, Mr. Westcott. Oh, no, I have not reconsidered. I definitely have not reconsidered. Stephen and I have talked it over, and he's deeply shocked, and so am I. I must confess at the very suggestion of disinterring poor Harry. You'll simply have to go elsewhere for your front-page scoop, because I'm absolutely adamant on this point, and no amount of persuasion will make me change my mind. I shouldn't be doing this. I knew it. I shouldn't be doing this.
All right.
Oh, I shouldn't be doing this.
All right, you wait here, Mrs. Archer.
I shouldn't be doing this. I know I shouldn't.
Now, don't take it like that, Mrs. Archer. We have a court order all properly signed and perfectly legal.
I shouldn't have let you talk me into this. I'm just weak, that's all. I'm just weak, yes. Stephen is sure to suspect something.
That $150,000 ought to go a long way toward making him forgive you.
Well, will it take long?
No, the workman is supposed to have it all ready. All that has to be done now is... Well, it won't take long. Would you rather wait in the caretaker's house?
No. I'll come along with you.
All right. Hello there.
Huh? Oh, you Mr. Westcott?
Yep.
Well, there it is, Mr. Westcott.
Yeah.
We hoisted it up, but we didn't open it yet.
All right, here's the authorization. Pry the lid off of there and make it snappy, will you?
All right, hey, you take that hand over there, Jack.
Okay.
What's the matter? Is it stuck or what?
Take it easy, lady, will you? It's coming.
There you are, mister. It's all yours.
All right, hold this light for me, will you?
Keep it off the face.
What's he doing now?
Frisking the corpse.
Oh.
And don't ask me why.
Oh, dear me. Oh, dear.
Keep the light off his face, will you?
Sensitive type.
Mm. Okay. I got what I came for. Please get that light off his face.
Okay, mister. Okay.
All right. If you're all finished, we'll tuck him in again.
Wait a minute.
Huh?
Put the light back on him. On his face.
Now, on his face. Hey, what's the big idea?
Oh, Harry.
Okay, you can douse that light. Listen, you guys. Leave this just as it is. Stick right here until you hear from me.
How come?
What's the matter, Mr. Westcott?
I'm not sure yet, but I just got a hunch the DA is going to want an autopsy on this body.
My stars and crowns.
Well, let's see what else we can dig up for you.
stars and crowns coming from coming from good old Agnes Moorhead there.
Yes. She is, that is not typically the type of role that she plays of a, I almost hesitate to say it, but something of a ditzy nature in this program.
Well, but there's a stretch of a role for her for what she usually did. She usually played the stronger individual type thing.
And, yeah, absolutely.
She was known as basically, she did more appearances on Suspense than any other single actor. And Orson Welles had five in a row, so he had more in a row, but she actually had more appearances on Suspense than any other actor. A neat little tie-in between this and her and Gerald Moore. Gerald Moore was asked to be part of the Mercury Theater, Orson Welles' troupe, as was Agnes Moorhead as well. So just a kind of neat little tie-in between the two shows there.
Ooh. Always cool info here on Erie House.
That's what we got going on here. Kind of a ditzy role for her. It's kind of fun to hear her in a role where she's not so strong. Yeah, there's one that she does called "Don't Call Me Mother." An angry mother type who just doesn't want to admit to aging, and she gets angry at her son, angrier and angrier at the show because he keeps calling her mother. "Don't call me mother," you know, which was a little different role for her as well. So
yeah. And it's not just her Bewitched role that makes me say that, because there's just been a lot of radio where she's been a rather tough gal. A rather tough gal.
Yep. And I think her Sorry Wrong Number was redone on Suspense at least seven times, and she came back to recreate that each time it came on. But
now,
she was in... Yep.
Over time, we'll play them all. Won't we, Dave?
Yeah, we will. We will.
We live that long.
Yeah, I don't think I think the Out Radio may live us, which is a cool thing to think about, you know?
Yeah, no.
With the advent of the internet has been an amazing thing for old radio, because before the internet came along, you had to buy these shows sometimes individually, sometimes in a half hour cassette or a half hour LP, 15 minutes on each side. I also bought them in reel-to-reel format and things like that, but now they're all out there and available, many even on YouTube. People are playing them on YouTube and podcasts, something like this, but not quite like ours, yeah.
Yep. And Mike Mace, something about glowing Roma sherry with a lump of cheese and a hunk of salami. Now, that to me, that's feasting. That's a nice snack right there.
There you go.
I'm down with that. They, Mike. Oh, in fact, I'm so hungry. I'll be right back. Here's part two of Post Mortem from Suspense.
Here comes the sun.
Come here.
Hey, what's this? Up and dressed already?
Well, I bought some things in town yesterday afternoon. The delivery man usually comes around 10 o'clock, so I thought I'd put off my sun lamp and bath until then.
Oh, you will take your treatment then, promise
me?
Oh,
yes, all right, darling, but really, you worry too much about me.
You must have come in awfully late last night. Did you see the show through twice?
Steve and I didn't go to a picture last night.
Hmm?
I did what you told me not to.
What are you talking about?
Here it is, Stephen. $150,000.
You fool, you stupid little fool.
Stephen, let go of my shoulder. You're hurting me.
Who is with you? Who saw it beside you?
Nobody, Stephen. I got the permit and took it out there and showed it to the man. It's on the ground, and he got a couple of workmen.
Yes, go on, go on.
Well, one of them got it out of the vest pocket, and then they put the lid on again and lowered it and covered it up.
Sure everything was put back again just the way it was?
Why, yes, Stephen, of course.
Well, I'd hate to think he wasn't put back properly.
Then you weren't angry with me?
Oh, I guess I acted pretty silly about it. I thought... Oh, I don't know what I thought.
Stephen, you didn't suspect me of having anything to do with Harry dying so suddenly.
Oh, of course not. What an idea. Well, look, you better give me that ticket for safekeeping. I'll put it in the safe down at the office till you're ready to turn it in.
Oh, that's a wonderful idea, Stephen. It makes me nervous having it around the house. $150,000, Stephen, just to think of it.
Yes. Harry's been pretty good to us, hasn't
he? Oh, don't say things like that, Stephen.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, good Lord, it's nearly 10 o'clock. I've missed my train.
Well, if you hurry, you can catch at 10:15.
You won't forget your lamp.
No, I'll start at a 10:15 sharp, I promise.
Sorry to be such a Dutch uncle, darling, but I do worry about
you. Well, you're wonderful to me, Stephen.
Goodbye, darling.
Goodbye, Stephen. Be careful, darling. Come in quickly. He just this minute left the house.
Suppose he took the ticket with him?
How did you know?
I know a lot of things.
For instance?
The DA's ordered that autopsy on the body of your late husband.
Oh, my stars and crowns.
I think they'll find out he was murdered.
No. Oh, no.
Your present husband, Stephen Archer, is an insurance agent, isn't he?
Well, yes, but
And he insured your late husband heavily in your favor just before his death.
Oh, well, that doesn't prove anything.
Well, maybe not. He's pretty good to you, isn't he?
Well,
takes you to Florida every winter, stuff like that.
I should say not. How did you get such an idea?
That coat of tan you've got.
Oh, that's from the sun lamp. I had a slight cold a while back, and now Stephen insisted I use the sun lamp for 10 minutes every morning while I'm in the bath.
While you're in the bath?
Yes, he says it's more beneficial that way. It's a terrible nuisance, of course. The bathroom's quite small, and the lamp is always toppling over and falling on top of me.
How's that?
Well, I always wait till Stephen has left the house in the morning to take my bath, and then he almost always forgets something at the last minute and comes dashing back and blundering into the bathroom, and over it goes.
What sort of things does he forget?
Oh, and one day it's a clean handkerchief, and the next some papers or other things that he needs, or a fountain.
Does he keep all those things in the bathroom?
No, but he can never find where they are, so he comes barging into the bathroom to ask me, and then over goes the lamp.
You don't say. I suppose you're insured pretty heavily in his favor now.
Well, naturally, being in the business.
Yes, naturally.
Mr. Westcott, you don't think...
I don't think anything yet.
Oh, dear, whatever shall I do?
I tell you what, there's a way to find out if you'll cooperate with me. With your acting experience, this ought to be easy for you. Now, this is what I...
Stephen, this is Mr. Westcott. He's with the bulletin.
Oh, yes. What can we do for you, Mr. Westcott?
I stopped in the district attorney's office on my way here, Mr. Archer. They've just completed an autopsy on the body of Harry Meade.
Joseph!
It wasn't my idea, Stephen. Believe me, it wasn't.
You understand, of course, I'm not with the police. I'm in this for a news story. Or anything else that might come my way.
I see.
I might be able to help you people if you'll tell me the truth.
Yes. What was the result of the autopsy?
The report isn't made out yet, but I think they'll find he died of a blow over the head.
Sit down, Mr. Westcott. I might as well tell you everything.
Josie, you don't have to tell this man
Stephen,
anything
let
now.
Me do this in my own way. You see, Mr. Westcott, it was all my doing. Stephen was in no way to blame for what happened. He used to come over in the evenings to see Harry, not me. But the more I saw him, the stronger the feeling grew on my part. Harry was heavily insured in my favor.
Oh, Josie.
Well, he never took me seriously. He always scoffed at my love for the theater. And I couldn't help thinking how opportune it would be if anything took him away from me.
Josie.
Do I make myself clear, Mr. Westcott?
Go on.
Well, The night Harry died, he had gone out in the back of the house, you see, to get some air. I was doing the dishes, and it came over me all of a sudden what I had to do. And so I dried my hands and went upstairs and got out an old flat iron I no longer used, and I came downstairs with it hidden under my apron and went out to where Harry was. Well, I stood there talking with him for a moment, and I waited till he turned his back to me, and then I did it.
You did what?
Well, I swung the flat iron by its handle squarely at the back of his head. He didn't die right away, but he was unconscious, and I could see it was all over. He had a weak heart, you know. And, well, afterwards, I took the iron over in the vacant lot and buried it. And the rest happened as I told you. Stephen came round, and we carried him into the house.
You mean you didn't notice the wound? Didn't it bleed?
Well, it did a little, but I washed it off. And then I took some pinkish face enamel I had left over from the days when I was an actress, and I plastered that over the wound and even powdered it so it'd be less noticeable. I made a good job of it because, after all, I do know something about those things, you know, makeup. So that's why the doctor never noticed it when he examined Harry's body.
Why? Josie, I can't believe it. Forgive me, Mr. Westcott, but this is a terrible, terrible shock to me.
Well, now you know everything. I suppose you may as well drive me to police headquarters.
Why should I?
You mean you aren't going to turn me in?
That dent in his head could have been made by the men who exhumed the body. You and I are the only witnesses to that, Mrs. Archer.
But, yeah, but look here, can't they tell
me? In most cases, in this case, the body happens to be in a remarkably fine state of preservation. Besides, if I do you a favor, maybe you'll cut me in for a little of that sweepstakes ticket.
Anything. Anything you like.
Good. I'll come back tomorrow and we'll talk it over. Good night.
Good night, Mr. Westcott. And thanks. Thanks from the bottom of our hearts.
Good night, Mrs. Archer.
Bye.
Well, my dear.
Stephen.
I've got to do a little thinking, Josie. This changes things considerably.
It won't make any difference between us, will it, Stephen? I did it for us, so we could be together.
You, of all people, and going out there and then looking at his body.
But he was so well-preserved, Stephen. He just looked as if he was sleeping. Is that peculiar?
What is?
Well, that he was looking so well. After all, it's been some time. It's just like in the Emerald Snuff Box.
What?
The Emerald Snuff Box, you remember. I played it for 33 weeks at the Court Theater opposite Henry Dixie. That was how they knew that it was poison, because of the way the body looked after all that time.
Poison? Well, those bungling police doctors will never find it out. We can shut up that fool of a reporter with a sweepstakes ticket. That was a windfall anyway. We'll never miss it.
But, Stephen, we can't count on things turning out the way we want them to. I made that confession just to give us a little time. We could take a plane in the morning and be in South America in a few hours.
Oh, no, that'd be very foolish. No, my dear. Our best strategy is just to go on as we always have. I'll take the train into the office, you'll take your bath and sun lamp, and we'll be the same loving couple we always have been. Josie!
I'm up here, Stephen, in the bath.
Tell me, have you got any idea where my iron pills are? I went off without them.
Well, they're on the sideboard in the dining room, you know perfectly well.
What's that?
I said they're on the sideboard.
I can't hear you, dear. Mind if I open the door just a bit?
No, Stephen, the sun lamp's right in front of the door. Wait till I move it.
That you say?
I said don't open the door. The lamp, Stephen. Oh, Stephen! No, Stephen!
Josie. Josie. Well, that's that. Now, who the devil? All right, I'm coming.
Mr. Archer?
Yes?
My name's Madison, Bureau of Detectives.
Oh, yes, Inspector, come in. This is most opportune. You're coming just in time. I was just about to telephone the police.
Oh?
The most terrible thing has happened. My poor wife.
Your wife?
She was in the bath taking her sun lamp treatment. Like a blundering fool, I opened the door and the lamp fell over into the tub. I ran downstairs to cut off the house current, but before I got back, she must
have... Wait a minute. You ran all the way downstairs to cut off the house current. Why didn't you just pull out the plug?
I was panicky. I got confused. There was a dreadful glare of light, sparks flying all over the place. I was half blinded.
Where's she now?
Oh, she's still in there. I was trying to get up my nerve to go in when the doorbell rang. I couldn't bear to see her like that, Inspector. Electrocuted. It's too horrible.
Well, we'll go up there and have a look. Probably too late, though.
Oh, yes, Inspector, I'm afraid it is too late, but as you say, we must do all we can.
Yeah. Well, Miss Darcher, this certainly happened at an opportune time, as you say.
Yes.
A warrant has just been sworn out for your wife's arrest for the murder of her first husband, Harry Meade. This reporter here from the Bulletin said he got a confession out of her.
Hello?
Oh, poor Josie. Poor Josie. Oh, perhaps it's just as well it happened this way.
Is it, Stephen? Is it just as well?
Josie!
Well, Mrs. Archer, congratulations. You carried it off with flying colors.
What do you mean, carried it off?
My stars and crowns, Stephen. I wasn't even in the tub. I just stood behind the door and screamed when the lamp went out.
Josie, you ought to be ashamed of yourself giving me a fright like that.
It's no good you're pretending any longer, Stephen. Mr. Westcott was absolutely right. You're nothing but a common murderer.
Josie! Surely you don't believe that I...
That is what my confession was for, you goose. To trap you. They know all about how you killed poor Harry. Well, you got the poison and everything. Don't you, Inspector?
That's right, Mrs. Archer.
Why, you're worse than Sheldon Lewis was in the Iron Claw. You wouldn't stoop to anything. Ah, stars and crown, when I think what might have happened if Harry hadn't had on his new blue serge when he bought that sweepstakes ticket. Well, officer, do your duty.
Josie. Some little Josie.
Well, I guess this about ties it. Come on, Archer, let's go. Up on your feet.
Yes, Stephen. Up with the buttercup.
Suspense.
Presented by Roma Wines, R-O-M-A, made in California for enjoyment throughout the world. Before we hear again from Agnes Moorhead, the star of Postmortem, tonight's suspense play, this is Truman Bradley for Roma Wines. Here's a trick in taste magic that will help you win family praises, even for meals made of leftovers. To bring out the full flavor of any meal, to add color and zest to the table, serve Red Roma California Burgundy. A glass full of robust, full-bodied Roma Burgundy lends warmed-over pot roast a new lease on taste. Gives twice-served meatloaf that tempting first meal flavor. Yes, there's greater dining pleasure in simple meals served with the rich, satisfying goodness of Roma Burgundy. For superb Roma Burgundy makes plain foods taste great, makes great foods even better. And delicious Roma Burgundy can grace your table often, for Roma costs just pennies a glass. Get Roma Burgundy tomorrow. Give zest and character to your next meal. Insist on Roma, R-O-M-A, Roma Wines, made in California for enjoyment throughout the world.
This is Agnes Moorhead, and it's always like coming home again to do suspense. You know, Vincent Price came out to Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer the other day to see a private showing of The Green Years with me. And afterwards, he told me all about next Thursday's suspense show on which he's going to be the star. Be sure and listen in, because it sounds wonderful.
Next Thursday, same time, Roma Wines will bring you Vincent Price as star of Suspense, radio's outstanding theater of thrills.
Produced by William Spear for the Roma Wine Company of Fresno, California.
California.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
It sounded like... like Arnold
in California. What else can we learn from our show tonight?
We can learn something more, I think.
Well, we need the intro music. Don't be a dumb guy. Erie House Radio proudly presents a garless moral of the story.
with apologies to Gar. sometimes a lucky sweepstake ticket, it ain't always so lucky, especially if you're a murderer. There you go.
That one gets
everybody run off and wash your hands. Yep. Everyone run off and wash
your hands. Don't forget to wash your hands.
That's right. Important. Important.
So important now they make signs for it because no one would ever think of that. Have to have a sign to wash your hands after going to the restroom.
I just always think that's so insulting in those bathrooms. You know, so the employees must wash your hands. Well, I know how to wash my own hands. I don't need an employee to come in and wash my hands. That's crazy.
Who knows where his hands have been?
That's right. That's right. It's been in the taco sauce. But you know, outside of that, you don't know what's in the taco sauce, do you? No.
No.
And I used to work there.
More reasons not to go. But
it's a while ago.
Still, there's a half-life, isn't there? I don't know. We still have one more for you tonight.
We do. We have those dark fantasy.
Yeah, something. Now this is also from the 40s, is it not?
It was early 40s, coming to us out of Oklahoma City. There's a lot of strange things about Oklahoma City. This is one of them.
Yeah. Funeral arrangements completed. Is that our title?
It's also known as the other title we had as well, the Coffin for Two, also known as Coffin for Two, yes, AKA.
That was a Spike Jonze song, wasn't it? Coffin for Two.
No, I think it was a cigarette manufacturer commercial.
Okay. Funeral arrangements completed. Do we have an exact broadcast date for this gem? Mm-hmm.
That we do. It was episode number 26, not Twix. Number 26 comes to us from May 15th of 1940 and two.
Anybody here?
Richard, that high back chair. There's someone sitting in it.
All you can see is his hand and wrist resting on the arm of the chair with a burning cigarette between the fingers.
He must be asleep. Why don't you wake
him
up?
Wait a minute.
Richard.
The cigarette. It's burned down to the man's fingers.
Oh.
Whoever that is over there, he's dead.
Did you ring, sir?
Oh, I say. Oh. are you the innkeeper?
I'm sorry I was so long, sir. We're short-handed these days. I was outside and couldn't come any sooner.
There's a dead man over there.
What was that?
A dead man. Sitting right over there in that chair. Well, he's gone.
But Richard...
Did you say a dead man, sir?
Yes. He was sitting there in that chair.
He was there. My wife and I both saw him.
Must have been the shadows from the fire, sir.
I say, come here, will you?
Are you looking for lodging?
What is it, dear?
Come over here.
All right.
There was someone here.
Certainly there was. We both saw him.
Look, there on the floor by the arm of that chair.
Oh, a burning cigarette.
Yes, the one we saw burning in the dead man's hand.
Yes.
I say, innkeeper, come over here. Oh, I didn't see you follow us.
Look, we saw the man from over at the desk. All we could see was his arm and hand with a cigarette between his fingers.
That's the cigarette down there, still burning.
And it was burning the man's fingers.
I'm sure you're both mistaken, sir. There's been no one here in the lobby. It was merely the shadows from the fireplace.
Then how do you account for that burning cigarette there on the floor?
One of the guests probably dropped it, sir, by accident before retiring.
But I tell you, there was someone sitting in this chair.
Then, since he's not here now, it may have been the aunt.
So, The haunt?
Yes, miss. Folks call him the ghost of the Big and Emma.
No, come now. Don't start any nonsense about ghosts.
His name was Trafalgar. First or last, I don't know which. No one remembers. He built this old wayside inn more than 200 years ago. Married his girl, he did, just after it was finished. The night he moved in, he was murdered in cold blood by one of the girl's rejected swines. Killed Trafalgar for revenge, he did. Right here in this room. While his honor was smoking his last smoke before retiring.
Oh, then it was the ghost.
Could have been, miss. Could have been. Folks claim they see him every now and then. Though I can't say I has.
I say, look.
Yes, Governor?
There, on the back of that chair. Isn't that a spot of blood?
Well, no, I don't rightly know, sir, but... Well, yes. I believe you're right, Governor.
Oh.
The man was stabbed in the back, he was. Through the heart. Seems that spot there would be just about where he would leave blood behind, was he to sit in this chair here.
Oh, Richard, let's go.
Oh, so you've seen him, too. Well, that makes three times this month. Seems like he's making quite a habit of visiting us lately.
Oh, shall we go, dear?
Yes, Emily. Right away.
Will you two be wanting a room for the night?
Oh, no.
No, we're looking for a place called Merivale.
Merivale, yes, I...
Yes, we thought we had the right directions from Effinshire, but we ended up here.
We seem to have lost the way.
Oh, no, Governor. You just haven't gone far enough. Merivale lies about 20 kilometers to the west.
How far is that in miles?
About 12, 13.
Then let's go on, Richard. We can make it in 20 minutes.
The road is not so good, miss. Take probably 45 instead of 20. Besides, Merivale hasn't been occupied for nigh on to 6 years.
You say it hasn't?
Oh, no, sir.
But we understood it had been occupied by a Miss Priscilla Longacre.
Yes. Miss Longacre died about 4 months ago and left Merivale Estate to me. When I managed to clean up my affairs in Madrid, we came up to retire and live on the estate. I was with a British concern in Spain. But now I've resigned and come up here. Till I got that message, I didn't even know I had an aunt living in England.
You say her name was Priscilla Longacre?
That's right. She died late in December. Day or so after Christmas.
Priscilla Longacre has been dead for 5 years.
No.
What?
Indeed she has, Governor. Police folks say that. 5 years ago, she telephoned here to the inn, she did, and asked for Dr. Riley. He answered the call, found her dead. So he come back to make a report. But when the authorities got to the place, the body was gone. Some say it was stolen. Some say the old lady become a zombie.
Oh.
Anyways, she was never seen again. And Merivale was closed up because nobody knowed who was kin to the old lady.
But that's impossible. Why, I was notified early in January of her death.
Who notified you, Governor?
Why, the man you just spoke of, Dr. Hiley.
You couldn't have been notified by him, Governor.
Why not?
Because he died 2 days before Priscilla Longacre.
But I have his letter.
Oh, have you now, sir?
Well, yes, of course. Outside in my car. He said he would meet me at Merivale tonight.
Then maybe you're going to see another ghost before the night is finished. Eh, Governor?
Richard, please, let's go.
Yes, dear, right away. Now, look here, innkeeper. Is what you've been telling us the truth?
Of course it's the truth, Governor. Why would I be telling you things what ain't true, huh?
Then there hasn't been anyone living in Merivale for 5 years. And Dr. Hiley has been dead that long, too.
That's the gospel truth, Governor. You'll see so for yourself when you get there.
Well, that's where we're going. You say it's about 12 miles.
About that, Governor. You'll come to a fork just around the turn, up a ways. Take the left one. The other goes to London.
Right. Come along, Emily.
Yes, dear.
If you need anything, my name is Jason. You can telephone here if you like. Just ask for the pig and the hammer.
Yeah, all right.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, say, this wind's strong. Come up in the last few minutes.
Richard.
Yes, dear?
Did you notice that man's hand? The right one?
No, dear, I didn't. Why?
There were deep, angry burns on top of his forefinger and the middle one. Like burns a cigarette would make.
Seems deserted.
Thank heaven that wind stopped.
Oh, Maryvale is in a small valley. Doesn't blow much here.
Look at the windows on the house. All boarded up. And so is the door. Hmm.
Looks weird in the moonlight, doesn't it?
Richard, is there a hammer in the car?
No, I don't think so. Why?
Well, you'll need one if we're going to get inside the place.
That's right. Those boards seem tightly nailed.
There might be something in that shed.
Where?
Behind us.
Oh, yeah, sure. Come on. Let's have a look.
Look. It's not nailed up. What? The door's hanging open.
Mm-hmm.
Richard.
Yes, dear?
We're not alone out here.
What?
I feel it. Someone's watching us.
Maybe it's the cigarette-smoking ghost of the inn.
Darling, I'm serious. I feel someone watching us.
You know, if I were the uneasy type, you'd scare me half to death.
I mean it. I'm frightened.
Oh, come now, darling.
I think we'd better go back to that town where we stopped for dinner.
Nothing doing. I wouldn't brave that road again for anything. Come on, here's the shed. Still got the matches I gave you?
Yes, but let's don't go inside, please.
Why not?
I just don't want to.
But we've got to find something to break away those boards from the door up at the house. Come on. I've got the candle. I wish I had a flashlight.
Richard, don't.
It's all right, dear. How about a match?
Oh, Richard.
Come on, come on. Give me a match.
Oh, all right. Here.
Good. There should be an old length of pipe or something in here we can use. There we are. There. Candle lit. Will you hold it, dear, while I look around?
Richard. What's that?
Hmm?
Over there in the corner. Those black boxes.
Boxes? Oh.
Richard. They're coffins.
Coffins? Oh, nonsense.
They are. They're painted solid black. Look. Three little silver handles.
You may be right. Three handles on this side, too.
They are coffins, Richard.
Yes. Yes, they are. The new ones.
What in the world are they doing out here?
Let me have the candle.
Look. Aren't those silver inscription plates on the lids?
That's what I want to look at. Here now. There.
Oh, Richard, I'm frightened.
Good Lord. Why, this place says Richard Longacre. And the other one, Emily Longacre. Died May 15th, 1942. Well, that's today.
Richard!
The light. Emily, what happened?
Oh, the wind blew out the candle. Richard, is that you?
What?
Is that you moving about in here?
No, I'm not moving. I thought it was you. Here, where are you?
Richard! Oh, let go! Let go! Take your hands off me right
now! Emily, where are you?
Well, we'll find out where Emily is in just a little bit. That was an abrupt break.
Yeah, they didn't really,
dark fantasy.
Yeah, they didn't really have a commercial break for this, so just kind of had to find a spot where the music got all exciting and cut it off right there.
There you go. And we'll return, of course, to this in just a little bit, but a pretty good program.
Never thought about going coffin shopping myself.
I had two months.
Did you? For yourself?
No, for my father.
No. Okay.
Yeah,
well, my parents
passed,
had already arranged
they
that.
Actually have a showroom for these things. It's terrible.
My parents already picked theirs out, but they were only renting it because they both wanted to be cremated so we could take them off to Lima where the rest of their family is. But, they chose one that just for show, and actually my dad didn't even use his because his was during – he passed away during – not of COVID, but during the COVID time. And everything basically got shut down during then for funerals and such. So it was we got a refund on his unrented coffin that he had rented.
Hmm.
In some of the passages they have for funeral rites, they're telling you to save money and not buy a coffin. It says dust to dust, advocating cremation. Do they not?
So they could. True. There are also natural cemeteries that put you in a little cheap pine box and let the worms get at you quicker, you know?
Yeah.
Yep.
They should go further and just put you in a cardboard box, and then you'd really go.
Yep. Or just throw a bunch of dirt on you. That you go even quicker.
Take
away the box.
Who needs a box? Someone, somewhere said, I can make a nickel if I can put him in a box. And that's where it started.
Ah. I just don't understand funerary expenses. I mean, seriously, how much can a can of gas and a pack of matches cost? Maybe $5, $7 in California. I don't know.
Yes.
I think it's sad you can't do a Viking funeral anymore, you know? Put them out on a raft and set it on fire.
You can, I'm sure. I'm sure.
Not here. Not here.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You're sure?
Pretty sure that's not legal.
I've never dug that deep into it.
I'd like to, though. I would like a Viking funeral. It'd be fun.
Well,
get out of Cuyahoga, man.
Yeah.
Wait a second. You want to catch a river on fire while you're at it, too? Come on. Let's be safe.
Oh, that's true. That's right. You have flammable water there. I forgot.
We do.
We have flammable water. You know, it would just be a bigger send-off. Right?
Yeah. It would be quite the spectacle. And that's what I'm shooting for. Go out with a bang.
The difficulty would be in hiring Vikings these days. Good luck on that.
wait a minute. Mike Bennett says, we can't do that. It's the EPA. What are you implying about me burning up? What are you implying, sir?
I mean, the worst ones are the politicians who are full of gas. You know, those guys just right up, man, right away.
Man.
And the smell was
smoking on the hill.
Yeah.
Yep. The smell would be unbelievable from the politicians. Really.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Smoking on the hill.
Just like shaving cream.
Shaving cream. Be
nice and clean.
And clean. Hey, that would be saying yes, you'll always look clean. We are down with our Demento today.
Yeah, we might hear from Dr. Demento. You just never know.
You never know.
The horse in the room, I have a note.
The horse in the
I
room?
Set two alarms, and I slept through both of them. I slept through both alarms.
Like, may I suggest a louder alarm or something, you know?
Here's
a guy. We're talking to a guy that has an alarm over his toaster. Okay.
That's right. Yeah, I know.
Come on.
If only I was making toast. I know.
God, I did not know this. Gar, I did not know this about you. You have an alarm on your toaster?
He has a smoke alarm right over his toaster. I guess he likes his toast very well done because we're sitting here talking on the phone, and all of a sudden his toaster alarm is going off.
Yeah. What's that? Oh, toaster's ready. It's like 8 feet away, but for some reason there's a direct smoke line for it. It's very weird.
Perfect. Product placement there.
Here's a hint, Gar. Put it on light toast. Put it on light toast. That won't happen.
There you go.
No, we like that. If our toast is, I like my toast like coffee dark. Okay, there you go.
And crusty.
And crusty. I had to figure out how to
and
say that
crusty.
Correctly.
Yeah, it's right.
And crusty. Yeah, there you go.
I grossed myself out.
Yeah, you. Okay, now you're being more a weirdo than me. Blay, blay. All right.
Should never surprise you.
Should never. See, Gar thinks when you said that, I was thinking Krusty the Clown. You're thinking something else. I don't know.
Krusty coffee is no good. That's all I can say.
Oh, no. Yeah. Yeah, Krusty the Clown. Mm.
Yes. I don't think he'd be able to sell coffee with a name like that, though. Krusty's coffee.
Oh, I bet you some people would think of the
joke. No.
They pay twice as much for that. What are you talking about?
It would be very popular. You put a Krusty the Clown little logo on there with his head, Krusty the Clown coffee, a winner.
It's a frightening thought, but you're probably right.
Yep.
But Krusty the Clown coffee would be
it's a Sideshow Bob coffee. A creamer you couldn't sell, yeah.
Sideshow Bob. We're really getting into our Simpsons here. Is that who that is?
Yes.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, Simpsons. Meet the Simpsons. There's a
I dropped them like what, 15 years ago? 20 years, 25. Yeah, I haven't watched them in a long time.
Yeah, they're still going today.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, not today, on Sunday,
I thumbed my nose at The Simpsons when they said, we are a longer-running television series than Gunsmoke, and I said, no.
Yep, they are. They have them.
Cartoon.
No.
Yeah.
Who knew?
No. Well, we better wrap this up so we can tell them what's going on later, perhaps this week.
Oh, yeah, we've got to leave time for shameless promotion as we wrap up.
That's right.
Our episode of Dark Fantasy, Funeral Arrangement Completed, or Coffin for Two.
Richard! Let me go! Get your hands on me right now!
Emily, where are you?
Not here. She's gone. Must be on the floor here someplace. Has to be here someplace. Must have light.
I see. Longacre.
Who's that?
Is that Richard Longacre?
Yes.
Thank heaven.
Who are you?
Quiet. Don't let him hear you talking.
Who are you?
Can you get a light going?
Yes. Found the candle. See if I get a match. Yes, here. What? No one here. No one in the shed but myself. The door's closed now.
Good Lord.
The lid. The lid on that coffin. Moving. Something inside pushing it up. Slowly pushing the lid up. Pushing it up.
Quiet. Fool. Take this confounded lid, will you? Well, don't stand there looking like a stupid country pumpkin. Take this lid so I can get out of this cursed casket.
Who are you? How did you get in there?
Will you take this lid, you fool?
Sure. All right. There.
Now, help me out.
Sure.
Give me your hand.
Yeah.
How long were you in that thing?
Oh, heaven only knows. Hours before you and your wife came into the shed.
My wife? Where is she?
I have a pretty good idea.
Where is she?
I rather imagine he's got her.
He? Who?
Stuffy in that box.
Who? Where's my wife?
Where, you fool? He comes back and finds me here.
Who are you? Tell me what you know.
My name is Warren Hiley.
Hiley?
Yes. Dr. Hiley. The one who sent you the notice of your aunt's death.
But he said you were dead.
He?
The innkeeper.
Oh. Jason.
Yeah. That was his name. Jason.
I rather imagine he would tell you I'm dead. You see, he thinks he killed me.
What?
Yes. 5 years ago, he lured me out here to attend to the occupant of Merivale, Priscilla Longacre.
My aunt?
Yes. I found the woman dying. Someone had attempted to murder her. Someone did. I couldn't save her life.
The innkeeper?
Exactly. He attacked me. Left me for dead. But I recovered. And I hid the body of the dead woman. Found a place to hide myself.
But why?
Why what?
Why did you hide out? Why didn't you return and accuse the innkeeper of murder?
I had no proof. Besides, I was always devoted to Miss Longacre. I wanted to find that motive behind the crime. I did not know it would take 5 years to do so.
What was the motive?
It's not a novel one. Jason wants to buy Merivale because somewhere on this property are buried more than 3 tons of silver.
Silver?
Yes. It was brought to England from France during the Revolution. Its owners were captured and executed. And the silver finally became a legend. But now, I have discovered it.
Here? On this property?
Indeed, yes. Would you like to see it?
Now, look here. I'm not interested in silver until I find my wife. Where is she?
I think I can take you to her.
Well, then suppose you get about doing it.
You must be most careful. Here, hold the light over here.
Oh, sure.
Here, help move this straw aside. Hey, careful of the flame. There. I know. Very quiet. I'm going to open it.
All right.
Careful now. Give me the light. You go first.
All right.
I'll follow. Careful. Careful at the bottom. There's a quicklime pit just a few feet from the bottom of the ladder. There. Here. This way, this way. Iron pit's over there.
What's that? Emily. It's my wife. Emily. Emily.
Oh, Richard.
Oh, darling. Are you all right?
Yes, I guess so. What happened?
I don't know. The light went out and you disappeared.
Who's that?
Oh, Dr. Hiley, dear. The one who sent us the notice of Aunt Priscilla's death. Doctor, my wife.
Pleasure, Mrs. Longacre.
Where are we?
This is a chamber beneath the old shin. And I discovered it the day Priscilla was murdered 5 years ago. I brought her here. Can you get up, Mrs. Longacre?
Yes, I think so.
Here, dear, I'll help you.
I must have fallen down here.
Will you come this way, please?
Can you walk, darling?
Yes, I'm all right.
Over here, if you please.
All right. Come here.
Here. Under the heavy glass. Look.
Oh.
A body of an old woman.
She was Priscilla Longacre. I've kept her here all these years until I could get the entire Longacre clan together.
Now you are together. I waited for this day. 5 years I've waited.
Richard.
Look here, Dr. Halley.
Jason.
Yes, doctor.
Jason.
The innkeeper.
Watch them closely, Jason.
I'll watch them, doctor.
Richard.
You, Dr. Halley. You told me Jason wants to buy a Merivale. It's you who wants to buy it.
You'll never repeat that to anyone, Mr. Longacre.
Lies. Everything you told me, nothing but lies. You killed my aunt.
It took me 5 years to locate her only living relative. You, Richard Longacre. And now that you are here, Merivale will soon be mine.
Oh, but you can't murder her.
And no one will ever find either of you in the lime pit.
Oh, no. No.
Your coffins are prepared up above there. Tomorrow, there will be a funeral, but your bodies will not be in the casket.
Oh, Richard.
Do I get my pie now, Doctor?
Oh, yes, Jason. Of course. Here.
Oh.
You've killed him.
No such luck. Merely rendered him unconscious. But he'll never regain consciousness.
What are you going to do with him?
The lamb that will take short work of him.
Oh, no, no.
Be back. You'll join him soon enough.
Oh, don't do that.
Oh,
no,
wait. Stop.
I intended for you to fall into that pit. And I threw you down here through the trap door up there.
It was you up there. Crawling into that coffin and pretending to hide was all a lot of sham to lure me down here. Now, look here. I demand that you release us.
You're in no position to demand anything. Your aunt is next, and you'll follow her. And I warn you, this gun I have is loaded.
What are you going to do?
The old lady goes into the pit next.
Oh, Richard.
Let her alone.
Oh, not in your life. I've kept her hidden down here for 5 years. The night when I heard you were coming here, I finished.
Put that body down.
Stand back. I'll shoot her become nearer.
Richard, don't.
You've done enough, Hiley.
Stand back.
Put her down.
No, she going into the pit.
Put her down, I say.
Richard, come back.
You devil.
Richard, that woman.
You thought you killed me, didn't you, Doctor?
No, 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 no. Take care of her.
Thought you'd killed me after keeping me here all these years.
Oh.
Well, you didn't kill me, Doctor.
No, stop.
You
let me go.
Didn't
let me go.
Kill me.
Oh, help, help, the pit. The pit, help me. Help me, I'm getting lost.
You have heard funeral arrangements completed. Tonight's original tale of Dark Fantasy by Scott Bishop. Alf Daniels was heard as Richard Longacre. Eleanor Naylor Corran was Emily. Fred Wayne played Dr. Hiley. Georgiana Cook was the old woman. And Muir Height was Jason.
What?
Next Friday at this time, one of the most unusual of all Dark Fantasy adventures. Created for you by Scott Bishop. Reaching. For pictures of the production, Dead Hands Reaching, and of the dramatic staffs of Dark Fantasy, as well as for vivid and exciting picturizations of next Friday's story, Dead Hands Reaching, we call your attention to the two-page story appearing in the magazine Movie Radio Guide, dated tomorrow, May 16th. And now this is Tom Paxton reminding you to buy United States war bonds and stamps. Dark Fantasy comes to you each Friday night from Oklahoma City. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
And this is Erie House Radio. And now we actually have the man himself here.
We do.
And therefore, Erie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
The best thing about madness is that the government hasn't figured out how to tax it yet.
There you go.
That's always a good thing.
Always a good thing. Always and good then tomorrow we're on here at 6:30. Two more tales about coffins tomorrow night. For the short show, which ends at 8, and with any luck, at 8 o'clock, what happens?
On the Twitch is horrible horror. If I can get, if everything works right, and I'm not promising a thing, but if everything works right at 8 p.m., horrible horror starring Guy of the Gold will be on the Twitches.
There you go, and you have to check that out.
And we're heading, into Halloween week, aren't we, Dale?
Yes.
We are next weekend. It's four consecutive nights of Erie House fun. On Friday, it'll be all music. We got a double feature drive-in for Saturday night. Karloff and Lugosi for Sunday, and WOW, or War of the Worlds. W-O-W, get it? WOW. War of the Worlds, yet another adaptation. Dave, tell them a little bit about our Monday night, the 30th show.
Well, what it is on the 50th anniversary of Orson Welles' War of the Worlds, NPR recreated it in their own version. I think out of New York, I think, not quite sure. But, so we'll have another new recreation from National Public Radio on the 50th anniversary here on this 85th upcoming anniversary of War of the Worlds.
And we have not, I don't believe we've repeated a version yet. Each year, Dave comes up with yet another wild and crazy.
I already have another new one for next year in the can as well.
Wow. Wow, that's just tremendous everybody.
I gave you guys this huge package of old radio stuff. And it was called Something's Halloween's Happening.
Hagel.
Hagel.
Yeah.
Hagel.
I still have mine. It's good. It's good stuff.
And I could be wrong, but is Hagel a philosopher?
I don't know.
No. I don't know what Hagel is.
So.
I think he's a janitor.
Yeah.
A janitor.
Yeah. I think
at a radio station.
And he lives inside a drum, so, you know, he's a janitor in a drum. Real quickly here, we'll have a weirdness, really bad movie sighting next week. Mike Mace, I'm glad he's here because we'll have the Vortex, probably Monday night, we're going to have the return of Andrew Bentley, which Mike Mace and I hosted, kind of a green screen haunted house, part of things coming from DeBoard's Halloween Festival and all kinds of fun going on there. So
and
that should be Monday. We'll keep everybody posted on the Erie House page and the Weirdness Really Bad page and my personal page.
Is that this
and
Monday?
Dave, are not con-
should
are
be
not
this
congratulations?
What?
Are not congratulations what? Due to you, Dave? Didn't you win the award or something?
Yes.
The Spaceship One did win for CGI animation, so actually a great deal of that goes to James Travers, who does all the animation for our show. But, of course, without us there, without Mike and I there, being Mike Blast and Dave Boom.
Guys, gotta fly. We'll see you tomorrow at 6:30.
Castle lights are growing dim.
Sorry.
There's no one left but me and him.
And
when next we meet in Frankenstone. Don't come alone.
Okay.
Can you dig it?
Yes, I can. With a shovel.
We got ripped off. Ah, well. It snuck.
Sorry about the long shameless promotion there.
No, that's okay. That's okay.
Continue now. They'll hear it.
Yeah.
In the archives.
Yeah.
No, the spaceship one is really a fun, exciting thing to do. And that was a pretty special episode. And having Don O'Malley in there as well was fun. And it's always always neat to take something like this and an idea like that and just turn it into something that special.
Yeah.
It's
a great collaborations of talent kind of fell together for that deal between yourself and Mike, of course, and the animator, naturally. Good stuff. And the stand-up monster comedians are good, too.
It would be hilarious. Yeah, I'm not close enough to do it, but it would be a hoot to be able to do a walk on your spaceship one with Dale and I.
You know, we can do that sometime because we do that where, you know, we could just have you on the screen part, you know?
Yeah. In your crypt. Green screen.
Right.
Or in his crypt. His crypt would work too.
If I was ever up in the area, if all three of us could get together, we could do a thing where we're in the studio on green screen or whatever doing. That would be fun.
Yeah.
There's a way to do it, though, without you being here.
Oh, I know, yeah. I could record something and you could green screen out stuff, yeah.
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 Get a big green sheet and have at it.
I found a Hegel, and I don't know, because who knows what Hegel is? Janitor, I don't know. But there was a George Wilhelm Friedrich Hegel, who was a German philosopher. And he was a philosopher with influential notions of German idealism and 19th century philosophy, but a real weirdo from what I understand.
I thought he was a Viking.
He was influenced by Immanuel Kant, another philosopher, René Descartes, and many others.
No. He was a Viking. Hegel the Horrible. Well,
Hagar.
That's Hagar. Hagar.
Hagar. I see.
That's a confusing. I was digging through this. I don't know. I laid down. You know when you lay down and 10,000 thoughts hit your head and you go, I'm trying to sleep here. And so I bounced up and I was like, what is Hegel? And there it was, a German philosopher that gave us an amazing Halloween package.
Nice package.
Yeah. Well, I think I gave you one for Halloween and maybe Thanksgiving. I can't remember. I thought there were two Hegel packages I gave you guys.
I think you're right. I think one of them was for Thanksgiving, sir.
Yeah. But I was not in the know. I sent Dale and Dave this huge collection of old radio shows. Someone had amassed under the name of Hegel's Happening for Halloween and Hegel's Happening.
I don't think it was the philosopher, though, or the Viking to put those together.
Yeah.
Kind of disappointed about the Viking thing.
Well, who's to say that the Viking wasn't one of his sons? He had 14 children.
Wow. That kept Helga busy.
Well, I know it. I know what his philosophy in life was then.
Yes. But we can't
talk about that. Talk about bad timing. Woo.
Yeah. Well, back in the 1800s, there was only a few different things to do. I don't know.
True. That was one of them.
Chop down trees and the other thing.
Make little Vikings.
Make little Vikings, that's right.
That's right.
Make little Germans.
What?
Oh.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. Wilhelm Friedrich Hegel. And it's George without an E at the end, which is kind of weird. But maybe that's where it came from.
Gorg.
Yeah, Gorg. Without the E at the end, it's Gorg.
Yeah.
Gorg. And now introducing Gorg.
Gorg.
Yeah. yeah, he has some weird weird contemporaries and weird notions of thinking. That's a weird thing. I don't know. Have you guys ever taken a philosophy course?
No,
I haven't. I think it would be dangerous if I were to take one.
It would not go well. I know a guy that actually got a master's in philosophy, and the guy ended up being a server at York Steakhouse because he couldn't get a job with his degree.
Yes, but he can
reflect on that job wisely.
Hello. There you go. I should have taken
a different career path.
Right. I took one, and they focus on a select few philosophers, and not didn't really dig into what I wanted to. I kind of slept through the course, but yeah, I don't know.
That'd be my philosophy. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just sleep through the course. Yeah.
sleep through the course and run off to the local townhouse or whatever name of the local bar you had there. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I would have hit a coffee house. Yeah, I would have. Yeah, I need coffee. This isn't working.
Coffee. This is college here.
Coffee.
Come on.
Yeah. Well, no. They were putting me to sleep. I was like, oh my gosh, come on. I can't remember. Yeah, and there's my memory again. I know I took a course, but I can't remember the content. it didn't have an impact on me, apparently. Except I think it focused on a few select European philosophers, and then there you go. That's philosophy. And I was like, wait, what about American philosophers? What about Asian philosophers?
There were none. There were no American philosophers.
The guy that did, my favorite, what was it? Walden 2. Walden 2. Oh my God, what's that guy's name? B.F. Skinner? Walden 2. Walden 2? B.F. Skinner. Isn't that who that is? Yeah, B.F. Skinner was an American.
Wasn't that the guy on the X-Files?
B.F. Skinner?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was the vice something or other of the FBI or something, I thought.
Oh, they threw that in there? B.F. Skinner was actually a philosopher. He came up with utopian ideas about society. He was an American psychologist. And could be considered a philosopher. He had an idea about not exactly hippies, but a utopian society. Walden, too, is an interesting read. Like most societies at the end, it unravels and falls into disarray. We're just waiting for that to happen.
What they haven't figured out, the reason that societies decay is the people.
Is what?
The people.
Well, yeah. You know, it's like herding cats. You can't control people. Right?
Something like that. Herding cats.
You know, it's like herding cats. You can't control people. Look at the Hill right now. You know, it's very easy. You vote a guy in, you vote a guy out. They can't even vote a guy in. You know, I mean, what's going on? Herding cats. That's what that is.
Yes.
Have you guys seen this? This kills me. I'm not sure what it is. There's a new series. Might be an old series. Where aliens are attacking the planet, and they give the Earth an ultimatum. And it goes to Congress, and they argue about it. And it's like, what is it going to argue about? Oh, my gosh. Yeah, you know, they can't get on the same page. You know, we're being attacked and subjugated.
That's what makes Mars Attacks that much funnier. Ha, 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 they shook up.
Oh, I know. It's the
best scene ever.
Yeah. They blew up Congress, right? Yeah.
She laughed.
I feel like, and this is not a, I'm not favoring whatever they do over there, Russia. I'm not favoring communism, but Russia has a 5-year plan where if they implement something in the government, it's got 5 years, and if it doesn't work, they abandon it, right? And we need to do
not
that
a bad
in Congress.
Idea.
We need to do that in Congress. If you can't get your idea across in 5 years, you're out of here. You know, we get rid of all the old Congress people. See you later. Go write a book, you know, or sell your services as some
yeah,
type
don't make
of
speeches
an advisor.
And just go away.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, but get the heck out of office. We don't need you.
Yeah,
we need young blood
exactly.
in there. And I'm an old guy. I would not be eligible. I'm an old guy. I would not ever do that, even if I
yeah.
thought I could.
I wouldn't
you know,
want the responsibility.
Well, they keep doing this thing about, you know, you got people that are 70 years. If you're past retirement age for Social Security, get out of there. Come on. I mean, that just makes sense. You know? Go spend time with the grandkids or something.
The opinions expressed by Gar the Ghoul are not necessarily.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. Yes,
he's covering my
yes,
ass, man.
There you go, man. Hey, you don't want somebody talking
that's
about
why I always
to be on
pants.
Here.
Yeah. That's why, I always
that's
wear
why
pants.
You always
wear pants.
Pants?
Yeah, cover
well,
my ass.
Well, hello. Hey, wow. They just cussed.
Thank you for joining us.
Wow. Alrighty then.
Oh goodness.
There was yeah. I don't know why. I don't know what. But I took courses in philosophy and psychology. I had no idea why. And then Asian studies and you stick around long enough, you learn something, I guess. I don't know. Is that how that works?
I don't know. But we have yet to answer that age-old question. Women, what do they want?
And you'll never find that out.
Yeah.
They want time to do their hair, time to do their nails, and time to make a decision about what restaurant to go to. There you go.
What do they want?
They want time.
Please tell them.
They want the one thing we can't give them, time.
Yeah.
Everything else is secondary. They want time. And again, the retrospection.
Why does it have to be mine? No.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. The retrospects and comments and opinions of Gar the Ghoul are not a reflection upon Erie House Radio. Because we
and
don't
it's,
know what
and it's
they
advertisers
share.
And subsidiaries and stuff like
that's
that.
That's right. Are. That's right.
Whatever that
yeah,
means.
Yeah. You got to get litigious.
That's right. That's the society we live in, boys.
Mm-hmm.
Why go to work when you can sue a guy?
When commercials on television or radio switch from American-made products because U.S. industry died, and now what's it about? There's like two different things. Medication you can get from your
yep.
from your doctor, and how to sue somebody. That's
yes,
advertising.
Now.
They have kits, that's right. Buy our kit, yeah. 101 pharmaceuticals just for you.
And lawsuits.
And if they don't work, here's how to sue those people.
That's right.
Right?
Sue them from the comfort of your own couch.
Yes, yes. I was watching, because I've been looking for Halloween specials. If a television show is on for any duration, more than a year or two, they have different types of themed programs. One of them will be hauntings or a Halloween. And I ran across an old cartoon program called the Real Ghostbusters, and they have one about
yes.
Halloween never ending. And the villain is Samhain, Samhain. It's what the original name of Halloween was.
Samhain, it's pronounced, but it's spelled Samhain or something like that.
It's
pronounced
yeah.
Samhain, I believe.
Yeah. I-E-M, something, is that it? Yeah, there it is.
Goat pronounces it like this. That's how Goat pronounces it.
Goat has the
That's
the
how
right
Goat pronounces
dialect.
Everything. So he just pronounces everything that way. Yeah.
He's got the perfect dialect.
Yeah,
he enunciates
well,
Goat.
He does.
Okay, this is weird. I need to put Halloween on there, I guess. I say H-I-E-N. Oh, no, Samhain.
Samhain. Samhain.
Hain. Gaelic it's, festival. Beginning
it's
of winter.
It's pronounced Samhain, I think.
Samhain, yeah.
I think. I don't know.
Celtic.
That's what my devil
Celtic
worshiping Hain. Friends say.
Ah. So the Celts, are they, would they be your Vikings?
The Celts were more the early Irish people. They were a very earthy type religion.
Okay. So they would be polytheists, maybe? Many different. Yeah.
Not only that, but they probably believed in more than one god, too.
That too. Well, there you go. Yeah. I am of Scottish roots, and so the Vikings, I think, might be part of what's going on with me, maybe.
You have a castle, or not a castle? You have a.
Yeah, there is a Gar castle out there.
Not a castle, but something. Didn't you get the...
No, I bought some property out there. Yeah, I have property in Scotland.
You have like a couple square inches in Ireland, Scotland?
A couple square feet. I have two different plots, a couple square feet, and that makes me a lord. Lord God of the Goal. Lord God Thaddeus Gernstein. For me personally, in my head, I always liked the Vikings the most out of all peoples. Because they were the last to fall, saying we like what we like, and we don't like what you got coming in.
They tripped.
They were pushed.
Didn't care much for spam though.
They might have liked spam. We don't know.
Maybe they did. They did sing about it, so.
That's right. Yeah, the stems. Yeah, there were some Vikings there. they were last to fall to the shield of Christianity, I believe. One of the last European groups of peoples to fall under the sword, so to speak. There was a horrible thing. There was a story that this blew my mind. There was a story about these people, and they relished and loved this tree, and they praised this tree, a big, huge, honking tree out there in their community. And in order to get these people to kneel under a cross or something like that, these folks came in and they burned down their tree. And it's like, you cannot enjoy
terrorism.
This tree.
That's
horrible. I was like, what the? From the story I read, these people, it was like the town tree, you know, and they celebrated it and they decorated it and, you know, they enjoyed it and maybe they prayed to it, and that's what they had going on. And these other people came in and said, you will not do this. You won't celebrate your tree, you'll celebrate our tree. And they burned down their tree. It was like, why did you do that?
Yeah, that's kind of cruel.
Well, you know, their tree had less leaves, and it looked more like a letter T.
Bloody Vikings.
I know. I'm surprised they didn't remember.
You know that was coming.
Yeah.
Bloody Vikings.
Yeah. I'm surprised, as a warring tribe of people, I'm surprised the Vikings didn't revolt more and go, no, get out of here, you know, and just run them out of Scotland or Norway or wherever they were when that was going on.
No, they pillaged and all kinds of fun things.
And other things that we don't mention here.
Yeah, we don't mention, right.
Yeah.
Right. They had a good old time.
Because we won't mention the big hickey contest they had, you know. We won't mention
that. Yeah,
they were just making more little Vikings, that's all. But, you know, without consent,
making,
we'll say.
Without. Oh, wow. That was very well worded.
I'm on it
today.
I just had coffee.
You tapped it right around that.
Yeah. The brain is on today. We're
yes,
in
it
that,
is.
I guess.
Oh, wow.
And I do have a note from the doctor about having a migraine and sleeping through half the program. But
okay.
Did you guys were you able to use the morals I sent you? Because
yes.
Oh,
Dave did the morals tonight.
Okay. I wasn't sure if I was going to be with you guys or not, but
I
made it in
either.
The end. Yeah, it was a surprise.
That's all right.
Yeah.
Surprises are good.
My internet was out for another 9 hours yesterday, and I was like, oh, my gosh, what are you guys – I don't know what you're – they did it last week, they did it this week, and it's like, you know, things aren't necessarily better. But things are relatively somewhat better, but I'm still not a happy camper. No.
Well, then don't use your tent. Get in the house.
Yeah. Or start sleeping in the trees or something.
Indoor camping is a lot safer.
Yeah.
It
I
is.
Mean, trees is where those snakes are hiding, man. You don't want to go up there.
Oh, and I wanted to mention this one thing about dark fantasy this week. Most abrupt ending ever. It just was like, chop,
yeah.
You're done. Yeah,
yeah.
It was like,
Mike,
what the heck?
Mike left like 4 question marks.
Yeah. And then the other thing is, where did those people keep getting matches from? Because they were constantly, you got a match? It's like, yeah. Was it sponsored by the Black Arrow or Blue Arrow match company or something? I don't know. A lot of matches.
Matches?
Well, okay.
We don't need no stinking matches.
We don't need no stinking matches. Do you guys burn candles during this type of year just for ambiance or –
I do because I'm a chain smoker and it helps the basement fog.
I never thought about that.
The wife loves the tea lights. She has all kinds of tea light holders for the season and stuff.
I like tea lights too.
I have hurricane lamps here, and they're kind of nice to have on. You know, it's a different kind of lighting than the abrupt harshness of our LED lighting systems we have now.
I can't have them anymore. I'm not allowed.
You're
because
not allowed
the,
to have a herd?
Yeah, the lamp oil is bad for the parrot.
No kidding. It releases a byproduct that affects
yes.
birds.
Yes.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Are there... And how far did you go into that? Are there different formulas of lamp oil?
I don't know, but Denise, she's a bird expert, so if she says it's bad for her bird, I ain't doing it.
Well, no, of course, yeah. I abruptly discontinued.
So the science part I have not delved into.
Yeah, I guess the fact that there aren't any birds. I have a robotic bird.
She doesn't want a lamp bad enough to delve into it, apparently. So, yeah, I don't care.
Right,
I can live without one.
Yeah.
They're nice to have during storms, though.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Here in Florida, we get some storms.
I've heard.
But, yeah, I have a robotic bird. It's a minor bird, and it's a robot. And it, if you turn it on, it just repeats everything it hears. It's very annoying after a while.
Just like the real thing.
Not too far away from the real thing, exactly. But yeah, I have hurricane lamps ready, and I've got an entire drawer filled with wax candles at the ready, and I'm
you
ran
have wax
across
candles in your drawers. Oh wow.
Different kind of drawers. I ran across, there was a time where I was getting brass candlesticks, and I ran across and still have some brass candlesticks made in China, like Chinese stampings on them and everything, and they're very ornate. And my roommate, before he left, was like, can I have those? I was like, no.
No.
But yeah, here in Florida, you know, we have these crazy storms and you lose power. That's everywhere, though. It could happen anywhere. And oddly, the answer to that is to go back to before we had electricity and light a candle.
Yep.
I'm all for it. And it's weird. The lighting for a candle is also used in stuff for this season as far as like seances, pumpkins, different things people do. They light a candle. It just has a different kind of atmosphere.
I'm probably overdue for a nice seance.
Is there such a thing as a nice seance?
Yes.
Yeah? You sure? I think they're mostly out of your hands.
Well, I mean, if you don't call up an evil spirit, if you call up a nice spirit, then yeah, it's
a nice I don't think anyone has control enough over that to go, only the nice guys come.
Well, then I'm not doing it.
Yeah. The less than nice folks tend to go, I'm nice. You know, and it's like, what the heck?
That could be fun, too.
If you want to, you know, you might have to change your drawers after that. Mine are filled with candles. So, have you guys, anything new on the Halloween front for you guys? You got any new decor this year?
I am not decorating. We don't decorate.
We did get one skeleton that we have out in the front yard now that we didn't have. So that's new for this year.
But I am vying for a Halloween meal, so I got a nice Halloween tablecloth.
Oh, sweet.
Pumpkins, yeah.
It's got pumpkins on it?
It's got pumpkins on it. One Halloween, and I might do that again this year, we make stuffed peppers, but I take the peppers and carve them like pumpkin faces.
Oh,
and they're really cute. They're very cute, and they're quite tasty.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I have gone as far as to get one pumpkin pie and gone, there you go. I decor the crypt, but I don't decor the house.
Same here. I decor the basement, but not the house.
Right. And it's weird. I don't know if you guys had this earlier in your lives. Did you have Halloween parties and stuff like that in your home?
I was not allowed to have parties.
Wow, that's abrupt. That's harsh.
Yeah,
it
was. I thought.
How about you, Dave?
No parties.
Did Dave go away?
No, I don't think so. Dave, did you have parties?
No, I didn't. I was trying to answer, but you know, it helps when you take your microphone off mute for a second.
Yes.
I've heard. I'll have to try that sometime.
And this is crazy theatrical. In my family, on my father's side, my grandparents would open their homes to the neighborhood, and they had people lying in coffins. I mean, they turned their home into the haunted house event.
That's cool.
And they actually had someone in a harness and everything on a scaffold. It looked like they were swaying back and forth on a rope.
That's cool.
And I saw this as a little kid. I was like 5 or 6 years old, and I saw my aunt up there, and I was like, she was up there
awesome.
On the harness, you know.
We did have a haunted garage. One of the neighbor kids, they had no cars in the garage, so we're like, oh, right. Yeah, we're haunting this garage.
Yeah.
We made up little walls and little rooms for people to go in with monsters and charge them like 15 cents or something crazy.
They had the thing, like, close your eyes and put your hand in the bowl, and it was macaroni, and they said it was brains and grapes, and they said it was eyeballs and, you know, all that stuff.
No, we just used a sheep. We used Dave's goat.
That's right.
And the goat said,
right there. There you go.
If you can make the goat do that, then you win the prize.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I have photographs, or I did have access to photographs. They're gone now, but of this event, the entire neighborhood talked about these groups of people, and they were doing this crazy thing for Halloween, and it was just like severe theatrical stuff going on that they did, changing their house.
Uh-oh, somebody's beaming in.
Yep.
I hear a transporter.
CW here?
Yeah.
So you feeling all right this week, Gar?
It's been up and down, but
your voice is very, very good. You're like back to normal.
Yeah, it's not as strong as it's been, but stronger. My toe is still broken. The other one is still mending. And I saw a doctor this week, and they said, you can get on the treadmill. And I got on there. I was like, I'll have to wait until the pain subsides more. But yeah. So, yeah. I mean, how do these things occur? You know, so
and we're getting old. That's what. That's how they occur.
Breaking your toe.
Things break after a while, you know, including us.
Right, but it takes me out of commission because there are things I need to do. I don't have people I need to see, but I got stuff I need to do.
I know. I'm learning to do things slower.
Right. I have a project that I have going on where I have this. It's a blow mold pumpkin head guy, and he's like 15 inches tall. And
wow.
It's an old blow mold. He's orange, and he's got a top hat that's black, and he's got his head tilted in one direction. And I want to take him to a 3D imaging place, get him scanned, and then do an opposite of him. So he's almost like bookends because he's tilted in one way, tilted in the other.
Ooh,
and
cool.
The only thing is that they do this. The old blow molds, they would have an orientation to the left, but they wouldn't make a mirrored image, you know. So they've got a cat facing the left. Well, it'd be great to have that same thing mirrored and the cat faces the right, and then you've got a bookend.
Yeah.
And these are the old blow molds. You put a light bulb in them, and they glow. Mm-hmm. Up, they light up. So I wanted to do that, and I got sidetracked yet again this year. I wanted to do it last year, and I got sidetracked. So, it's fun to run across these, and now with 3D printing, you can actually get, it would cost too much to actually get someone to create a blow mold of it and then, you know, produce it. Unless someone was, like, really enthusiastic about this and, like, you know, that's a good idea, and I can make many, many more and sell them and be, well, that's what you do. I just want one. Blow mold was the way to go years ago. I don't know if they're still doing it. Well, no, they are still doing it. Because there are those the plastic pumpkins at Walmart or wherever. And those are blow mold, right?
I guess
pretty sure.
So.
I'm pretty sure. No, there's a whole bunch of blow mold is still going on, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe it's modified with technology, but that, man, we grew up on that. Santa Clauses, reindeers, Halloween stuff. Blow mold was the way to go.
Fun times.
Some people
gentlemen,
would get... No, it's time. Okay.
I'm running out of steam. I'm going to let the collie out. I'm going to let the collie out, let him in, and call it a night.
All right.
Well, let's call it a night. Let's one more call to make as we turn off the house lights, turn on the three spotlights, and into the center light steps. The one, the only, James Durant.
Big nose.
Good night. Good night.
Good night.
Good night. a good night.
Goat, go.
We've had a few laughs.
Good night, goat.
For toodaloo. Good night, folks, and good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
She's in Butte, Montana this week. 1 week only.
Your tickets down.
Oh,